And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and my shirt's wrinkled. Donna, look how wrinkled my shirt is. I didn't iron it. That's all right. I have a shirt on. This is, I got 12 hours of sleep. We've been working so hard. Yesterday afternoon, I went and laid down like 4, and I just got up, and I'm like, give me the weekend. I'm ready to go. We got finished a magazine today. We got Arizona Breakfast Club in the morning. Usually, we get like 30, 40 minutes of sleep between finishing the magazine and going to the Breakfast Club, and then we sleep the rest of the Saturday. So our weekend's gone, but last night, I got to do some sleep, so I am ready to go. My first guest today is Dolly Barker. Now, we always thought it was Davi, and I think he's going to help us out with the pronunciation of that, is Dolly Barker. And then we have Christina Tobin is on in the second hour. We're going to do a video Skype with her. She's from freeandequal.org, the ones that have been sponsoring the third-party debates. Now, the last one, is right before Election Day. Monday is coming up on Monday, November 5th, and it's going to be between the Green and Libertarian Party candidates. Okay? So we have, we're going to talk to her. Now, we were going to have her on yesterday, and she, blew us off, they had Zach Carter come on. That was cool. It helped us out, fill the time because she had a Russian TV crew coming in, and they're more important than me, I guess. So anyway, she was nice enough to go ahead and reschedule and come on today. So we're going to do that. Seth King in the third hour, thedailyanarchist.com. Okay, we're going to be talking a lot about Bitcoin and, what's after and next. But my first hour, we're going to spend a lot of time with Dolly Barker because he took a trip to Mecca. He is Muslims for Liberty, okay? He's the Muslim agorist, and he does a lot of artwork. He does a lot of the artwork for the dime cards for Silver Circle. Well, it's their Silver Circle 10th-ounce cards. Yeah, that's right. Now, there's something else I want to talk to him about. There is a unit of currency as defined in Islam that the Quran has, this is how much gold and silver you have in different units of currency. And he goes, these dime card things, that's a good way of doing it. He went to Mecca. Did he take any with him? Well, Dolly, did you? Wait, I got to push a button. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go, man.
What's the question?
Did you take some of those, what do they call it? It's dirhams?
Oh, silver dirhams?
Yeah.
The Muslims for Liberty cards.
Explain that to me. I mean, could you hear my intro? I mean, were you on?
No, I didn't hear anything until just now.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, I didn't know if I didn't have that button push. I thought on hold that you did. You heard me. You missed everything. I said nice things about you.
Oh, well, awesome. I'll have to listen to the tape.
Okay. Well, let's start off right here.
Okay. So we're live?
Yeah. Dolly Barker. Now, is it Davi or Dolly?
It's Davi.
Davi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dolly Barker. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, all right. Now, Donna thought she heard it differently, and I thought I'd been saying it wrong all this time. Okay, Dolly Barker. Now, Muslims for Liberty. Now, this is what we were telling the people, is that you are a graphic artist. agorist Muslim is what you go by, or Muslim agorist, and you have just taken a trip, you know, being Muslim yourself, you just went and did your pilgrimage to Mecca. At the same time, you know, you're doing a bunch of, you know, I would say of all the people that they have, oh, you know, these Muslims, they're against America and America this, America. You really embrace the true meaning of what it is to be American. And that means it makes you big enemy of the state.
Exactly.
So you go to Mecca, and I was wondering in the this dirham, this concept of how much you actually do trade in precious metals as part of the Muslim religion, which is what got, you know, like every Muslim leader that wanted to trade in gold in trouble. Okay, you get a hellfire missile if you want to do that. So tell us about that to start off with. You do a lot of artwork for Silver Circle, the, you know, Silver Circle, the animated feature film that's coming out by Pasha and, you know, Megan working on that. We've got to know them over the last couple of years. And that is all about a dystopian future where the people understand how the only way we're going to survive this thing is being able to trade value for value. And Silver Circles are actual silver circles. You know, Ron Paul in congressional hearings actually holding one up. We have, I mean, it gets a lot of attention. You do a lot of the artwork for them and their 10th ounce cards. And you came up with the idea of doing the dirham. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, silver is, and precious metals is a big part of, you know, what kind of got me turned on to liberty in the first place, because that's how I got a hold of Ron Paul and read all of his stuff. And, you know, that's just like the first domino in the chain, right? So, I mean, I'm also doing the art for a lot of the Don't Tread on Me stuff, so silver is all over my kind of activism. So, I met with Ron Helwig of Shire Silver when I was in New Hampshire for the Liberty Forum, and I'm also the assistant director for Muslims for Liberty, and so I had the idea of doing a co-branded card with Ron in the 3-gram denomination, which is the dirham, which is the traditional silver currency in the Muslim world. And so we just, you know, it was just some art and we printed them up and we had them made with Ron, and, it's kind of, you know, it's right at the outskirts. So we haven't really gotten any businesses signed on, but we use them as sort of a conversational piece with Muslims. And so I brought a stack of them with me when I went to Mecca.
Yay!
And, I wasn't actually able to find anybody who would like sell me a sandwich. But I was very nearly was able to buy a gram of gold for silver, and that was sort of exciting. But the guy backed down at the last minute because I think he became suspicious that he didn't really have any way of confirming what was in the cards. You know, like, because from his perspective, I'm just this stranger who's coming in with these cards full of silver, and he's about to give up an actual gram of gold. So,
yeah, I would think that that's the benefit of the U.S. minted old dimes. You know, they're more recognized. Now, it may not be the exact amount of so a dime has 0.0715 circulated amount of silver in it. What does that equate into a dirham? Have you figured that out yet?
It's about a 60% of a dirham, I think.
You know, that is it's so ironic and it's so deserving that you would have old U.S. minted dimes that you use against the man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
well, you know, the Middle East is covered with old Turkish coins. Old Turkish coins are gold and silver, and a lot of people still use them. You know what I learned on this trip? You'll love this. The term tax loophole was invented by Muslims. So the Ottomans used to tax gold and silver coins, but they didn't tax gold and silver jewelry. And so people used to drive a loophole into a coin and make a necklace out of it to avoid the taxes.
Oh, that's where that term came from.
Is that interesting?
That is very interesting. You know, the I'm trying to think. Well, then we could do a Turkish coin in a card. Could you not?
Yeah, you could.
Well, waiting on you now.
Yeah, well, I'll talk to Drew about it. I think it's a good idea.
You know, in the whole Muslim, you know, that's one thing you learn when you go to Mecca. You go, hey, man, they're just using Turkish coins. Well, I said, you know what? We can take advantage of that. We'll talk more about it with Bobby Barker when we come back about his trip to Mecca, a pilgrimage of a young Muslim. We'll be right back.
Quantum Vibe, it's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com from Big Head Press.
Well, that's a good thing to know. Usually when I had somebody on hold in there without pushing them, yeah, there's a bunch of buttons I got to push, and I didn't push them. But I thought they could hear. Okay. Now, what I'm going to go ahead and do is we'll go ahead and go step by step your trip to Mecca, but I want to make sure we preface it, you know, enough that people understand the significance of it. And we got to find out, you know, how you became Muslim. Were you born Muslim? Did you get converted to Muslim? How did you get Muslim? How do you combine Muslimhood and agorism and blah, 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 blah. So I think that the trip to Mecca, I want to spend a lot of time on it, but I want to preface it enough to where it has more meaning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
So where do you think we should start?
Well, you could start. I mean, there's a couple of different angles. There's the fact that there's pretty much no liberty in Saudi Arabia, and so that's a kind of a tragedy. You could talk about the origins of Hajj itself, which is religious, which is like this journey of Abraham, which is at least sort of interfaith, interesting.
Go back to that. What? Abraham's what?
The pilgrimage itself is an emulation of Abraham's being lost in the desert. So he and his wife, Hagar, his second wife, become separated, and Hagar's lost in the desert with Ishmael, and she sort of like is wandering through these mountains and discovers a fountain, which is the Zamzam fountain, and so that's where Abraham builds the Kaaba, which is the temple that sort of is sort of that's the Kaaba, right? That the Kaaba is the temple that Abraham
built. Well, I'll let you explain that, but the main thing is a common religious icon that, you know, to Judeo, Christian, Muslim, all the same. But we'll do the Abraham thing, and that'll be the combo.
And then just like as a personal journey for me, I mean, it was about sort of becoming a better activist. So, I mean, that ties in with liberty directly.
All right. Now, how did you become Muslim? Were you born Muslim? What?
No, I converted about 6 years ago. I was sort of, religious, just interested in religion in general, and I studied a lot of different religions, and I was kind of trying to write a book about what everybody believed about God, like what everybody agreed about God. And it just happened that while I was trying to write this book, there was a Muslim woman in the coffee shop I worked at who started talking to me about it, and she turned me on to some books, and I just decided to convert.
Convert from research. Yeah, libertarian circles, you know, like a Stephen Molyneux thing, man. You're crazy just for believing in anything anyway, and now, oh my goodness, Muslimhood!
You know, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that the fight. Okay, let's see what else.
It's the polar bear thing. I thought that was a great episode.
Oh, what, Flaming Freedom, they were doing that or something? Or who was doing that?
You had Stephanie Murphy. And,
oh, yeah, well, it was because of that. You know, I was listening. Sure. All right, here we go.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Well, there at least is a road to Mecca. You know, there's a pilgrimage to Mecca. You know, let me tell you. You know, what I understand from Davi and history and, you know, that Christian thing, let me tell you. Abraham is, you know, the God of Abraham. Okay, it goes back to the one God, the God of Abraham. And the whole trek to Mecca. It was all about the, you know, something to do with him wandering in the desert and his second wife and son, and they're out and kind of lost, and they found and built and do it. You know, we're going to get that from Davi. Explain that to us. But I remember, you know, it's an Abraham thing. So while we're all going up against these Muslims and, Islam, and they're bad and evil and must be all terrorists and everything, and y'all got to die, you know, it's the same God. You know, in fact, this whole trip to Mecca is based on one of the icons of Judeo-Christian Muslim heritage. You know, explain that story real quick for us, Davi, would you please?
Well, sure. I don't know the exact year, but I think, like, people estimate Abraham lived about 2000 B.C., and he had two wives and two children, right? Isaac and Ishmael. And Isaac becomes sort of the patron of the Jewish tribes, and Ishmael becomes the patron of the Arab tribes. And after Ishmael is born, he and his second wife, Hagar, sort of become separated, and they're, like, lost in the desert. And so Hagar is sort of with this baby lost in the desert, and she's kind of desperate, and she's praying for relief. And then she discovers the well of Zamzam, which is the well in Mecca, and it sort of springs out. And now this is still the source of water in Mecca, and so this is where Abraham builds this temple. And so the Kaaba is actually the temple of Abraham in Mecca, and the pilgrimage is an emulation of the pilgrimage that Abraham established at this temple, right? And so by the time you get to to Muhammad's life in, like, the 600s, you have Christians and Jews and pagans all performing Abraham's pilgrimage, and that's where Muhammad got it, was he's emulating what that society was emulating of Abraham's pilgrimage. So, like, it's essentially the entire journey is an emulation of Hagar and Abraham being lost in the desert and discovering this well. And I mean that's the whole point. It used to be central to all three, but I mean, for political reasons, it's not anymore.
Really? Now, you know, give us an example. Is there times when you had Jews and Christians and Muslims all sharing the road to Mecca?
Yeah, in Muhammad's life, it was.
Politics, man, politics.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Okay, so you needed to do. Let's go back a little bit. Okay, uh-huh. You're how old are you?
I'm 31 as of a couple days ago.
Happy birthday! And
thank you.
So all of a sudden, you know, this 5-6 years ago, so you're doing research for a book, you know, on religion. You're kind of, so why would you even do such a book to begin with?
Okay, well, I mean, this is my personal journey, right? My parents were not particularly religious, but I always sort of felt drawn to it even since I was a little kid. Like, I don't really remember, like, I feel like I had sort of like a natural primordial belief in God because nobody really taught me about it. And so, I remember when I was in high school, I remember praying that I didn't believe what any of the priests were telling me about God. So if God wanted me to follow him, then he would need to show me himself. And I was sort of inspired by Buddha in a way, because Buddha sort of sits under the lotus tree and waits for inspiration, right? But I had sort of just always been interested in religion, and I studied them sort of collectively. And at the time, like 6 years ago, I was mostly involved in like polytheistic pagan religions, like especially like the Viking religion or things like that. And I had this dream where a kind of critter appeared to me and told me that it was an angel and that all of these polytheistic gods were created by the same thing that created man, and so why worship them? And so I woke up and became interested in that creator figure more than the others, and I started writing a book trying to kind of combine or analyze what everybody agreed upon about God, like not just the Abrahamic faiths, but also like Buddhism and Hinduism, and even the polytheistic religions have a Godhead, and there's sort of certain attributes that people all agree with. Like, a lot of them call him the light, a lot of them call him the creator, a lot of them believe that he's eternal, you know, there's common traits. And while I was writing this book, there was a Muslim woman where I was working, and we had a lot of kind of long conversations about it, and she, you know, turned me on to some books and things, and it just it was consistent with everything that I was already, that I had already kind of believed. So it didn't even really feel like a conversion. It kind of just felt like somebody had articulated what I was already espousing.
So an exposure, an awakening, a finding. You know, this was a discussion. Adam Kokesh asked Stefan Molyneux and myself to be part of a discussion at Porkfest this last summer on, can you be libertarian and be a person of faith? I mean, can you do they
right,
combine? And my whole point was exactly what you were saying, is that I don't think it's an advantage to try and tell somebody that they're at least the search, you know, to look, to study, to read, to go to Mecca, to do, I mean, all the, and say, no, you're crazy for even looking. I don't think that's very libertarian. So I'm going, no, well, no. Let me finish this one thought. I wanted to make sure that young men and women that are searching are allowed to search, and that they're not chastised or ostracized from asking the question, because what you said is one thing that I have found throughout my life, that some people have that antenna. You know, they're a little bit more sensitive, you know, rational, reason, good libertarian, thou shalt not aggress individuals, and there is something there. And if you keep suppressing that, that's one of the big giant sins. I mean, you get in all big kind of trouble when you deny the reality that's in your head. And
well, I don't like to have this argument with the here's why I was really blessed. I think maybe you were too. I don't know your background, but I was really blessed with a childhood that was not very aggressive, and I didn't have a lot of religion forced on me. But what I hear from a lot of atheists is a lot of anger toward either their priests or their parents, or and I'm not saying that this is the only reason, but I have a lot of empathy for people who have a lot of emotions tied up in the ways that they were mistreated. And I mean, you can't erase that. You can't say that a person is being irrational or pick on them for these things where, I mean, they have legitimate grievances against their religious upbringing. I mean, Muslims too. I mean, people do impose these things by force, right? And so it makes sense that they would associate it with force.
Yeah, no, I agree. And mine, you know, I'm a tapestry of experiences, but that didn't stop me from just questioning. I mean, if you feel a little twingle in your mind, you know, do you research it or do you suppress it? Do you open it up or do you cover it up? You know, it's just kind of, you know, it's a choice. And sometimes if you choose to just open up the antenna and let all the radio waves come in.
If you want to move to the freeze.
All right, spend enough time on that. The, we can do a whole show on just that. What I'd like to do is, then you kind of just, what you were saying, we'll come, you know, just kind of tie it up by, you know, yeah, I already had kind of opened up to whatever, and this kind of linked in with everything that I said, so it really wasn't a conversion as much as it was a discovery, and part of that discovery is I get to go to Mecca, okay?
Yeah.
So we'll do that. And then the monetary thing, I think, is extremely interesting, to where you start to do the research in the history of how they treated money as a culture and what we're doing now. And God forbid you actually practice your religion in Islam around the world, you get a hellfire missile.
Yeah, that part of it, absolutely, because you're offending the banking cartel.
Right. So, I mean, we go right to that, and then we'll talk about the... what do you call the unit?
The dirham.
The dirham. And then the dinar is the gold, right?
Yeah.
So dirham and dinar.
Saudi suppresses that pretty heavily, though. They've got a paper currency in the central bank, and it's tied to the dollar, and so.
Yeah, this is my point. When you start talking about the trek of Abraham, you know, road to Mecca and all that kind of stuff, what happens is that you have a history to where the culture is supplanted by force of the banks and the government and the kings and all this kind of stuff. But the people That's different. And I think what's happening, and it's happening much more quickly than people realize, to the point that you got little California boys going out to Mecca, okay? And the culture is much more powerful than the law. And they are, and a lot of times, especially when the culture is based on another higher law. And this is what I see happening very quickly. All of a sudden, you're going to start having, there'll be a movement, there'll be, I guarantee, hell, just because I even just thought of it, there will be a year to where the Islamic community will welcome Jews and Christians and Muslims are going to be, you know, an equal part almost, and a big, giant, massive, you know, to Mecca. And then there'll be a hellfire missile from a Predator drone blow everybody up because they can't have that, you know? So This is, I can see it happening. You know, humanity is bypassing all this stuff. And a lot of people don't see it because they're so immersed in the battle, they don't see what's happening. You know,
well, they estimated over a million undocumented pilgrims this year, like people that just crossed the border and camped on their own and didn't pay any attention to government whatsoever.
These things I want to talk about. So we'll go ahead and confirm, you know, kind of do this, you know, from my search, it was my exposure to Islam was kind of just a confirmation of what I'd already thought anyway. And so, okay, I grew a beard. All right. Then we, the silver thing and banking and law and all that, I'll just try and bring what I just said in, kind of wrap it up and give me about 90 seconds and I'm going to throw it to you. And then you kind of tie all those together and go right into your trip. Cause I don't want to, you know, take up too much time. We get right to it. Cause I want to get to your trip.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back in 30 seconds. That's Freedoms with an S, PhoenixEzine.com.
You can interact with other LRN listeners in our message board at forum.lrn.fm. That's forum.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, we're going to get right back to Davi here in just a second. I just want to kind of tie this together because I want to make sure we get to the, you know, road to Mecca. I am of the opinion that culture trumps laws and kings and governments and all that, you know, whatever. They're oftentimes a side effect or a manipulation of the culture, or they are in place to try and steer the herd of the people as livestock into blah, blah, blah. When you have such a fundamental thing as a one God religion that is practiced by Jewish, Christian, Islamic people, and there was a time where this trek to Mecca was shared by all. Oh, heck no. We got to make sure that doesn't, we got to separate and divide, conquer, you know, divide and conquer kind of thing. We got hellfire missiles, all right? So this is, I'm wondering who would be in the biggest opposition to have it in the future. Think about it. In the future, there will be a reconciliation by the people. And they'll just go, you know what? Jews and Christians, an equal amount and number, and everybody welcome. We're just going. You know, you know what? Next year, we just decide. You know what? We're going on vacation. We're all going to go to Mecca. And everybody welcome to it. What would happen? Oh, the suicide bombing stuff might happen. By whom? Israelis? The U.S. government? You know, some Muslim country. I mean, who? It'd be they, them, those. Those that won't leave you alone, obviously. So the thing is here you have a young man that, you know, has already got his antenna up anyway. He's feeling there's something there. I'm going to explore this something. All of a sudden, he comes across Islam, and he goes, you know what? This pretty much just links right up and dovetails in and everything. I was kind of looking. It's not so much a, you know, conversion as a discovery. Okay? It's like, all right, I'm over here now. So he researches this. He starts to find out that, you know, in their religion, it dovetails into all of his agorism, his libertarianism. And he's going, oh, yeah, they're into this gold and silver thing. You got the dirham and the dinar, silver and gold. But they don't do it. Why? Some countries do. They start, we're going to go on a gold back, yeah, boom, hellfire missile. We're going to do it, boom, military, marine, go and do take over ours now. You know, there's something else deeper going on, but with communication in transportation, which is why they're kind of shutting down that transportation thing. Here comes communication. We just reported yesterday the United Nations wants to control the internet. Yay. You know, so this all, I am of the opinion that culture of humanity around the planet is going to trump all this crap. And Davi is a perfect example of how that happens. So, Davi, with that, you know, anything you want to correct or add to, please. But I want to get straight from your discovery of Islam and how it dovetailed into your agorist beliefs. And all of a sudden, boom, you're going to Mecca. And I want to hear about your trip.
So, I mean, this kind of, it didn't occur to me until I arrived. But this is actually, I think, what Hajj is. Because, I mean, Saudi Arabia, the Saudi family, they're not a government as the way you would imagine it. Well, maybe the way you would imagine it. But they're an oil cartel. That's what they are. And they were, you know, appointed and paid for originally by the British, and now they're defended by the Americans. And there's the people of Saudi Arabia know that they're petty dictators, that they're not a representative government in any sense of the term. So from the Saudi family's perspective, Hajj is propaganda. It's their claim to legitimacy as an Islamic government. And I'm sure if it were completely up to them, they would shut the whole thing down. They don't want a bunch of foreigners coming into their country and criticizing how they run the place. But they can't. They cannot physically stop people from coming to their country. They will, no matter what they do, no matter what they say, Muslims from around the world will be coming to their country. And so they're primary motivation, I think, is to just get their name on buildings and get their names on, you know, they want to act like they're gracious hosts, but I don't believe it. So, I mean, yeah, I think it is. There's a big cultural shift. Like I was telling you during the break, there's an estimated 1 million undocumented pilgrims that don't fill out any government paperwork. They just show up with their tent, right?
Well, I mean, how do they show up? I mean, where's the, you know, they just cross in the desert, you know, on a front that's 30 miles wide, or is there a road somewhere?
Oh, yeah, there are roads. You can drive in as long as you agree to drive out, and so some people drive in and then pay someone to drive their car out. There's a story going around this year. There's a guy from Bosnia that just walked the whole way. And there were a lot of Bedouin type people where they crossed the desert and they set up a tent way up in the mountains, and you can see these whole tent cities being constructed up in the mountains. And nobody thinks the Saudi government is legitimate. I mean, so they just go, you know. And the Saudi government's too busy with crowd control to try to police that at all.
Well, crowd control, define that.
Well, I mean, you've got 4 million people, and so they've done some things where there's some construction, and there's some they try to like direct the flow of traffic, right? That's the main interaction you have with police is they're not going to let you walk one way, they're going to tell you to walk another way, they're going to check your bags before you go in one building, and you know their whole deal is crowd control during the Hajj season.
Okay, so and tell me about how you got there. All of a sudden, you're dropped, rappelling from a helicopter. What?
No, I took there was a travel agency, and I signed up with a group of, I don't know, maybe 60 people, and we rented an apartment building in Mecca, and we rented a sort of series of tents in Mina, and we traveled as a group. You have to apply for a special visa. Saudi has special visas for Hajj. They're temporary.
Well, you say Hajj. What does Hajj mean?
Hajj is just Arabic for pilgrimage.
Okay, so you're doing your Hajj, and you go, all right, I'm coming to Saudi Arabia as a Muslim. I mean, you're on a freaking list somewhere.
Yeah, probably. I mean, who knows? I don't really believe that the sovereign citizen thing is going to be an effective strategy, but I do believe that I'm tired of being forced to lie on all of these forms. So I actually signed my application under duress. I didn't sign it because the application says you agree to abide by all the laws of Saudi Arabia. So I called the embassy and asked for them, and they wouldn't give them to me. So I couldn't sign the paperwork.
So how did you get it? Would you just say, I signed under duress? What?
I signed under duress. I didn't sign my name. I filed the paperwork. And, you know, they're probably just too busy. They didn't catch it, I guess.
So your signature wasn't actually on it.
Right. Because I'm not going to sign. I'm not going to sign. I mean, this is supposed to be like a spiritual journey of self-actualization, right? I'm not going to sign a piece of paper that says that I believe your stupid government is legitimate.
See, it's guys like you, man. You know, they're just you're just a stick in the mud. Okay. So here is a young man that goes there, doesn't speak Arabic, I imagine, do you?
A little bit. I know the numbers. I know, like, some basic who, what, where, why, when. You know, I took a class, but no, and I'm essentially illiterate.
So how are you treated? Did you hang out with other English speakers? Were you by yourself? People welcome you? You just grabbed someone's skirt and walked, or what?
Yeah, we were with an American group. I spent some time with the British group. Also, there were some Arabic speakers in my group, so when I went to the market, I would go with one of the people in our group that spoke Arabic so I could negotiate.
Okay. So, you went in, how big a group was it? Is it from America? Tell me everything, man.
Yeah, I'd say our group was about 60 people. There are dozens or maybe even hundreds of groups. Our group in particular was around one scholar who's an imam in San Jose. And, you know, they have a group in Saudi that sort of does sort of the organizing of, like, you know, our meals and our lodging and stuff like that.
So what is the actual trek? You wind up at the airport. Okay, we got to get to the trailhead. Okay, where's the trailhead?
This is interesting to me because actually the Kaaba or Mecca is not the final destination of Hajj. It's actually Arafah, which is a mountain out in the distance.
Ah, we're going to find out the real truth. I guess you got to circle the monolith there, and then you head off where you need to go. We're going to find out when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with Dobby Barker, Muslim agorist, taking silver to the Holy Land. We'll be right back.
Before I became a customer of Liberty Coin and precious metals, I called one of the internet companies that sells gold. I didn't like the impersonal hard sell or the fact they were in another state. Liberty's different. I could walk in their store, look them in the eye, see, feel, and walk out with what I'd bought. No hidden fees, no hard sell, no mystery, just great prices. And Liberty's one of the biggest gold sellers in the Southwest. Their experts took the time to get to know me and my investment needs. There's so many reasons I'm now a Liberty Coin and Precious Metals customer, but the most important is I trust Liberty. Remember, they're right here in Scottsdale. So drop in or call Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052. Or on the web at libertycpm.com. Liberty.
Okay. We got in the last thing here, see. We get there and the actual pilgrimage itself, when you actually, okay, we're in line and the starting pistol goes, okay, and then what happens? How long a process is this? Is it half a day, 3 days, what?
It's about, I think it's 4 days. I think it's the 8th to the 12th. That's six. No, it's 4 days.
So you gotta, you camp wherever you finish walking or what?
Yeah, basically. We had camps already set up for us by the travel agency. But some people just carry it all on their back, you know. And I broke with the crowd a little bit and did a little bit of sleeping on the street, so.
Okay, cool. And then I'd like to see, I mean, the purpose is what? Is there some kind of religious experience? Is there fasting involved? Is there deprivation of any way? Is there a big orgy somewhere or something? I mean, you know, there's got to be something.
I think the physical journey is part of it, and emulating the pilgrimage is the main part of it. But for me, it's not like Mecca is the place where the Kaaba is, right? But you actually leave Mecca. That's your first day, and you leave Mecca and you go out into the desert and you travel to the mountain of Arafah. And
how developed is it on the trip?
It's a tent city, right? There's a sort of a midpoint called Mina.
Well, I mean, there's not like a Circle K out in the middle and between the two or some crap or something. Right?
No, but you know, you'd be amazed how eager the market is to sell things to people. You know, there are the locals. They travel with the group and they sell you everything that you could possibly need. So,
very cool.
I should have known better. I should have expected the market to provide.
All right. Well, that's what we'll talk about. We'll be back in about 30 seconds. This is, you know, we need more time. And we are not going to get into all stuff I wanted to talk about. Can we reschedule again for next week?
Yeah, it's fine with me.
Donna, take a look at next week. Go ahead and work it out with Davi when we can get him on next week. Because I just want to, people are going to be like, oh, man, you, ooh. So we'll do that. All right, here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your
life. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Davi Barker, Muslim agorist. You know, what we're going to do is we're going to have him come back again next week, because we're just definitely not going to get in all the stuff I wanted to talk to with Davi about. We have so many projects and things that we've built up and everything, but I want to, you know, instead of trying to worry about that, we'll get to that later. I want to finish up on his trip to Mecca. How many guys you know did the pilgrimage to Mecca? Well, we got one. Okay. So he arrives in Mecca. There's a group of about 60 around Imam that was, you know, near in California where he does and knows and it's all cool. And some guys like speak English and stuff. So that makes it a little easier. You fill out your paperwork. He's like, I got to abide by all the laws of Saudi Arabia. Sign. Okay, can I have the laws? No. Okay, well, I ain't signing. Well, they kind of went through in the paperwork, and they, oops, I forgot that part. So he gets in, he goes, he skates in on that one. He goes to Saudi Arabia and lands wherever, we'll find out. And then you got to get to Mecca. You get to Mecca, and that is where the journey starts, and you leave to go out into the desert. How long? About 4 days. It's 4 days of camping, getting to a mountain or whatever. So pick it up from there. You arrive. Where did you fly into? Into Mecca, or is there an airport somewhere else? Wait, I gotta push a button. Okay, I'm sorry, where did you fly into?
We arrived in Medina, which is where Muhammad is buried, and then we took a bus from there to Mecca, to our apartment. And, you know, like, I see the world like a libertarian, so when I see these huge, grand structures and wonderful, beautiful architecture, and I know that this is what the state built, I don't see, like, a beautiful spiritual religious monument. I see propaganda, right? Like, they could have built big, just big red brick plain buildings around these places, and people would still come. So, for me, what was interesting in these places is the locals, is the people, which is the market, right? So, around all of these buildings is the market, and you have people from all over the country coming to sort of sell their wares, and it's everything from people buying shops to people setting up carts in the street, to people just laying out blankets and selling water. And, you know, I packed too much, frankly. If I were to go again, I wouldn't pack anything. Because, I mean, the market provided everything that a person could need.
All you needed was some Turkish silver dimes and you're done.
And the currency office even sold silver. They had silver half ounce bullion in the currency office. So, if you brought silver, you could probably get riyals.
All right, very cool. So, you get there, and you kind of got the experience. How long were you there in Mecca before you actually started the pilgrimage itself?
Just a few days. And then,
how long were you there?
It was a two-week trip altogether, because we spent a lot of time in Medina before it started, and we spent a few days in Mecca before it started. But the actual pilgrimage itself is 4 days long.
Okay, you start, there's a starting pistol. It's like a Boston Marathon or something. I mean, you know, how does this work?
Well, essentially, so everybody is starting in Mecca, and you put on the ihram, which is like the white garment that everybody's wearing. And then you go to Mina, which is the 10th city, kind of halfway there. And then you go from Mina to Arafa, which is sort of the final destination.
Well, how long a walk is this? I mean, you know, you're going 20 miles in the first day, 10 miles, 5, what?
Well, most people are bus. They've built sort of public transportation now, but that was a big surprise, a failure. And a lot of people walk. It's a few hours walk at least. I mean, I walk miles and miles throughout this whole trip. I mean, my feet were just blistered and felt like I was walking on broken glass by the end. But most people bus, and we took a bus from Mina to Arafa, because that's, I think, like 9 miles or so.
Okay, so you get to the first break point, and then what, they got, pop-up tents?
Yeah, it's now it's a whole big, production, and they're like these air-conditioned, kind of comfortable tents, because it's just packed wall-to-wall. But there's a lot of people, they just bring mats, and they just set up in the street. So that's, to me, that's kind of like, that's real kind of roughing it. And, I mean, it's so warm, it's not difficult to sleep outside. I slept outside a few times. But the main destination is Arafah, and Arafah means to know. It's a verb, and it comes, some people think it comes from the saying, Man Arafah Nafsahu Arafah Rabbahu, which means to know yourself is to know your God. So for me, this was the point of the journey, was to reach this place where you're supposed to spend the day in sort of contemplation about, like, self-knowledge, and about, like, critically analyzing yourself and your faults, and trying to better and purify yourself. Right, and so this, I think, probably has been lost. You have to understand too, most of the pilgrims are like, they're from third world countries, and they're largely illiterate, and they probably even haven't had very much religious instruction, and so some of the sort of deeper meanings of things are probably lost on a lot of the people. But for me, this is what it was about. I have personal flaws. I have things that are holding me back as an activist that I want to rectify, and so that's what I spent that day thinking and praying about, was what's holding me back, what makes it difficult to speak the truth in a room full of statists,
I never had that flaw. The one thing that, when you get there, did you have any kind of an enlightenment? Did something spark? Did you get your character reinforced in some way? Did you benefit?
Yeah, that's too long of a topic. I absolutely had a very positive experience. I filled two notebooks full of journals, so I'm probably going to publish some sort of a travel log about the whole thing. But for me, it was largely around what is holding me back. I have a kind of fear of success as an activist and as an entrepreneur and everything. And so a big part of it too is I mean, I know you speak all the time, but speaking is a really nerve wracking thing to do, because I mean, social pressure can be more influential than physical pressure sometimes, So. That was a big part of what it was for me.
Well, I tell you what makes it easier is experience. As you go through, you have things that you personally know about, you went through, you did. Most of my speaking is, all right, well, let me tell you the story about, and then you go on what I thought about it, what they thought about it, what I said, what they said. I mean, all of a sudden, then you're filling up an hour. I mean, it's really no more than that. Doing these kinds of experiences is what gives you more confidence in something to tell, because you personally experienced something to tell.
Yeah. So there's a saying from the prophet that is, and this has sort of become my guiding principle, and he said, if you see evil in the world, then change it with your hand, and if you can't change it with your hand, then change it with your tongue, and if you can't change it with your tongue, then hate it in your heart. And hating evil in your heart and not saying anything is a really, like, anxious, it's a real anxious state to be in. And so my goal moving forward is to transition from that position of hating evil in your heart to just speaking against it, at least.
Well, you speak in a very unique and creative and effective way, because, see, the thing that you may think that, someone that can just, blah, 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 like I do and fill time, is it's good and I wish I could and whatever, while I'm envious of the fact that you do such quality art, because you get the right graphic, you get the right logo, you get the right emotion on something, they're all saying, I don't have to talk, I just hand them a card. Okay, so
yeah.
There is enormous power in what you do. So I'm just, that's why we need to, we're going to be doing the first chance we get, Tuesday through next week, something. Donna's going to go ahead and set it up for you to come on back next week, because I want to continue this conversation. We're going to run out of time before I got even near to half the stuff I wanted to talk with you about. So,
hey, yeah, sure.
So let's go ahead and do that. And then, Davi, the result, give me the dates. When did you go and when did you get back?
I left on the 15th. I got back on the 31st.
Of October.
Yeah.
So you just got back.
Oh, yeah, literally. I'm still jet lagged.
So this is, you know, so it'd be even better to talk to you next week after you kind of processed a lot of this stuff. But I'm telling you, you benefited. You go, oh, this is good, good.
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty excited, actually, about cleaning up the journal that I kept, because I think I had some really kind of useful insight for activists, and I'm going to try and keep it very general and not, like, Islam-specific. So,
you know, one thing I'm really pushing for people like you to have the art, to have something to say, and so on. Donna, send him the Pork Fest self-publishing thing that Ruby and Taryn did. I want him to watch that. If you watch this, Taryn has a way. I mean, you want to get your thing in the top 100 on Amazon? You just follow Taryn Lupo's.
Oh, I'm friends with Taryn. I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm telling you, man. This is stuff that you see, a lot of people don't understand how interesting and how viral something like that can go, especially when it has the quality art from the Muslim agorist. You know, I'm really happy that you got something out of this, and I'm hoping that you'll come back and share it with us. And I think we need 2 hours. Do you think you'd be up for 2 hours next week?
Yeah, I can do it.
Yeah, let's do it. 2 hours. You hear that, Donna? All right, 2 hours with Davi Barker next week. You guys check the list, and we'll announce it, and it'll be
This is the Onion Week in...
All right, that's what we'll do, and then we'll have more comfortable. We can chill.
Man, I won't have a cough anymore. I'm still coughing. There's so much smog in that city. I just saw 3 stars the whole trip.
Really?
Yeah.
Even out
in
the desert?
I know, 3 because I photographed everyone. Yeah, even out in the desert, there are no stars in Saudi Arabia.
Why?
Because of all the smog. It's an oil cartel.
From what? Do they refine there?
I don't know, but they subsidize it. Gasoline's about 10 cents a gallon. In Saudi Arabia. So everybody is running their engines all of the time to run air conditioning. Like, the streets are packed, like wall-to-wall with cars, and they're old cars, too. So, like, they're just billowing smoke all the time. And, yeah, it was awful. The locals wear face masks all the time now.
Wow. Property rights.
From a climate perspective, it's probably a lot like Phoenix. Like, the temperature is about 104. And it's a desert, but yeah, there are stars.
Damn. Okay. Well, you know, these are all interesting things. Do me a favor and make a note card or a note of all the stuff you want to make sure we get in 2 hours. You know, things like the smog, about the, you know, I mean, all this kind of cultural things and, you know, what the solutions would be and his cousin, the monarchy and blah, 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 blah. And then have it ready for next hour. Or even send me a copy, you know, so the stuff that we make sure that we cover and we just want to check off.
We have an outline or something?
I'm sorry?
Sure. So we have like an outline, right?
Yeah. I mean, just stuff you don't want to forget. I mean, we don't got to spend 5 years on everything, but you can at least mention, you know, hell, at the beginning of the show, we can list it. Okay. Smog's really bad. This is a... Okay, and we'll get to some of that.
I mean, literally, I filled the journal I brought, and I bought a new one and filled that one, too. So,
well, you know, you could take a lot of the stuff that you're willing to share, notes that you want to have. We just put it on the archive page.
Sure.
You know, so we just print it right up with the show.
Sure.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. All right.
Hey, I got a personal question.
Sure.
Why do you think my art is dark?
Because it's got a lot of black in it.
But that's because silver circles would be dark.
I'm sorry?
Well, most of the art you've seen is from Silver Circle, and that's kind of like a gothic punk world. Like, it's supposed to be dark.
No, I know. I didn't mean it's like, you know, dark emotionally or anything. It was just dark.
Okay.
And I'm going, because what happened, it's the reason your artwork is why we changed printers, because they couldn't pop the colors and still have the blacks. So I'm just going, well, you know, Davi definitely pointed out your weakness. You know, we can't use you anymore because we like Davi. Get over it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was just dark. I go, well, his artwork's all dark.
I've heard you say it like 3 or 4 times, and I'm always, what does he mean?
Because it's dark.
All right.
I look at all my stuff and I go, let me see, which one's Davi? Oh, it's all the black stuff.
Yeah. Part of it, too, is all of the dime cards have a black border, so that's part of it.
Yeah, no, I like your artwork. There's nothing, you know, but we had to change because all the dark made it to where you couldn't pop the colors.
Yeah, I saw the dark print. I know what you're talking about.
So I just like, you know, like, screw it. I got, so instead of changing Davi, I changed them.
All right, well, cool.
You know, so... you know, get over it. All right, man. We'll have Donna, and you can schedule it for next week. We'll get you all taken care of.
All right, yeah, we'll be in touch.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, yeah, go check out freedomsphoenixezine.com. We publish our 18th edition tonight. Okay, this is the e-zine, man. We love telling you all about that. Now, what we're going to be doing is this hour, we have Christina Tobin on. Now, she's Skyping in, and we're going to be talking about the third-party debates. Now, she was the co-moderator, along with Larry King, in the last one that had four third-party candidates. Now, there was a selection process somehow. She's going to tell us about that, by where we now have Jill Stein from the Green Party and Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party going to be duking it out on Monday. Now, I'm hopefully, you know, we're going to get a contrast between the two and why and what and, you know, and which one of them should, or both of them, should be up there slapping around Barack and Mitt, you know. But I'm just, I tell you what the no fear part comes in. When you have a free and equal somehow got the attention of the planet, probably because they're the first ones, to go ahead and have, and this process by which they got Larry King, and who's going to moderate in the next one. Oh, this is what we're going to find out this hour. Because Christina Tobin is an attractive young woman that's out. Where'd she come from? I have no idea. We're going to find out. And all of a sudden, they get the attention of the planet. This is the debate that you're not hearing over on everybody else telling you these are, you may choose from communist candidate A and fascist candidate B. I mean, you know, yay, statist, totalitarianism, we rule you people. And there's some other options out there. No, you don't even get the time. No, heck no, we don't want to talk to them. Christina got to talk to them. Now, Christina, welcome to the show. Please go ahead and tell me everything, Christina. Where'd you come from? Fair and equal, what's that about? How'd you get this debate on? How did you get Larry King? Tell me everything.
Oh, well, geez, thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to finally meet you.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, thank you. I'm actually chair and founder of Free and Equal Elections. Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution, all elections shall be free and equal. And I've been involved in electoral reform since I was 18 years of age, back in 98. I'm 31 now.
Oh, so I was wondering, you're saying 18. I go, when was that, last week? I mean, you look fairly young. So, okay, you're 31. So this has been over a decade. So that puts you back in the late 90s. And you're involved in fair and equal elections. Why? I mean, let's go back to there. Why are you involved in this? Why?
Yeah, with free and equal, I mean, it derived from my dad. You may recall he ran as governor back in 98, Jim Tobin, as a libertarian in Illinois.
Ah.
And I saw firsthand what the system does to knock voices and choices off the ballot. I mean, he got, well over 10 times more signatures than the Democrats and Republicans. And the system decided, well, they didn't want more voices and choices, and they knocked him off the ballot. It was so unconstitutional. And since then, throughout the years, I've worked different jobs. I got dad on the ballot 4 years later in 2002 as lieutenant governor. And then Ralph Nader, this guy on the left, gave me a call in 2004 and said, Christina, you're the only woman ballot access experience in Illinois. I need your help. Can't you be for more voices and choices? I said, Yes, I can. I may not believe in all your views, but I believe that people should have a chance to vote for you. So,
absolutely. I went through the same thing in 92. We have all these election laws. I went to the Ninth Circuit, oral argument, doing the whole spiel, challenge 44 election laws. And the whole thing, they go, oh, you must be for Perot. And I go, no, 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 no. I'll fall on the sword to have the chance not to vote for him. That's what I'll do.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happened. And then I got the Green Party of Illinois in the ballot. And then 2008, I was the National Ballot Access Coordinator for independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader. I would have done it for Ron Paul, too, but Ron Paul told our organization, Free and Equal, Christina, the number one reason I can't, and I'm not going to run for, you know, for president, third party, last time around, is because of the restricted ballot access barriers. It, you know, it took millions and millions of dollars just to get Ralph Nader on the ballot in 2008, and it's a very, very difficult thing. So, aside from that, ballot access barriers, another big problem we have are these closed debates, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, you know, the Commission on Presidential Debates.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Here in Arizona, we're kind of lucky. We're included in a lot, you know, most of the debates. And it was because in the early 90s, when I was county chairman of the Libertarian Party, we were real buttheads about it. And, you know, it's I can go on and on about that. But the thing is that it's a cultural thing here. They expect the libertarians to be in the debates or it's not a debate. And it's, you know, and the work that you're doing is the kind of things that we were doing, and you're going to, you're taking it national. I would not be surprised. I wrote an article in 2000. They asked me, as a congressional candidate, oh, we need you to write an article, encourage people to vote. Nobody's voting anymore. I go, you're asking the wrong guy, man. I mean, you know, and the article basically went like this. I'm like, you're still voting? And I'm like, so at the end, I'm saying, there will come a time to where the people in the streets will be demanding their rights regardless of the vote totals, whether they're accurate or not. And you're going to need the libertarians in the debates just so people will watch them. I mean, it's getting to that point. So I see you as a trailblazer for everything that I have been as a young man. Now that I'm 51, I've been waiting for Christina. And I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing and got pretty face on it. Never hurts. Okay. So I go, all right. Now, if we were to ask you and say, all right, well, what's your that's one thing about Freedom's Phoenix. You'll go, well, you have this guy on the left, and you got this guy on the right, and you got this neocon talking about whatever and immigration. You got this, you know, socialist, you know, he loves Hugo Chavez. You got, how can you say you're a libertarian site and have this such a wide radar screen? I go, that's what's libertarian about it. Okay? And that's where you are coming in. You're having all the people on the left and all the people on the right. Bring them on in. That's what's libertarian about it. Would you call yourself a libertarian?
No, I'm actually an independent. I don't associate myself with any party because I've learned in dealing with people at the national level, whether it's Libertarian Party, Green, I can see within the Democratic or Republican Party, simply that parties don't work. And with all due respect, the Constitution doesn't even mention parties. So while there are some mostly wonderful people at the national level of the Libertarian Party, I've been informed that the National Libertarian Party didn't even publicize the debate that Gary Johnson participated in, moderated by Larry King.
They don't have their mental abilities are limited, okay? Now,
it's just Larry King. You know?
Okay, right. No, don't even get me started. Okay. My question to you, when I say libertarian, I don't mean Libertarian Party. You're confusing me with someone that thinks that the Libertarian Party is libertarian. Okay? So this is, I've run for national chair 4 times. I know, okay?
I'm very familiar with you.
So you get it. I have no love for, you know, parties any more than you do. But your philosophical bent, are you, would you consider yourself libertarian philosophically?
I really am an independent. My role is to unite the grassroots spectrum.
You're such a political. What are you running for office or something? Come on. You know,
no, I really am.
Well, define that.
I worked for Ralph Nader. I ran for
Secretary.
I don't
care about what you work for. Do you believe in the initiation of force?
Well, I believe in freedom, and I believe in shifting the electoral system back to the origins of the Constitution. I've never voted for a Democrat or Republican. I never will. And when I ran for statewide office in 2010, Richard Winger, election law ballot access expert of Ballot Access News, was my campaign manager. And I ran as a libertarian, but I would have ran green. I really wanted to run independent, but it was going to take over 100,000 signatures to be, you know, an independent.
Okay.
First a couple hundred.
So you are positioning yourself to make absolutely certain you do not get stuck with the libertarian label because you want to represent the philosophical and ideological freedom of any and everybody to express themselves on the ballot that's supposed to be free and equal per our Constitution and the promise. I get it, okay? I get it.
Got it.
And everybody else gets it too. All right. So that makes you very libertarian. All right, so we're going to be back with Christina Tobin in just a little bit. There's a billion questions we all want asked and answered.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe.com.
Christina, what I also wanted to do, I wanted to get that out. You know, where's your philosophical, what I get it. Okay, I understand.
Yeah, you're a fun guy. I like you, by the way.
Thank you.
I talked to you for 5 hours straight.
You're my new favorite person. Okay. Now, this is what we're going to go ahead and do is that, see, the thing is I remember when I was you. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, I was this generation of new you guys coming up calling BS on the whole thing. You know, it's just that we didn't have the internet then, so we focused on Arizona, and it became kind of a touchstone or a lightning rod or an example to the rest of the planet on how things. I give you an example. In 04, when I ran against McCain, it was the highest third-party vote percentage in the nation, okay, for federal office. So I get all these libertarians around the country. They want to come speak. Ernie, oh, my goodness, how did much money did you spend? How did you do? Tell us everything. I go, I told people not to vote. Never mind. We don't want to talk to you. So the thing, what they didn't realize is that I was calling BS on the whole system. I'm
exactly.
saying, you know, doing the same thing that kind of what you're doing. I'm going, you're still voting? I ran for Secretary of State 2 years later. That's where that still voting with the V for Vendetta and the V came from. I'm like, and it was voted the most popular campaign sign in the newspaper. So I'm going, you don't understand how distrustful and how much people just hate the whole process. They know they're being manipulated. And anybody that will come up there and say, you're being manipulated, go like, I'll vote for that guy. You know, and be manipulated into voting for him. So, you know, it's but they don't want to hear that. And in the National Party, they're just so, they're worse than useless. It is the most amazing thing. And I didn't need to run this last summer, even though NOTA, you know, got the most votes. It got 50%. So if it would have got 50 plus one, there's one guy that voted for himself. So he, you know, kind of messed that up. But NOTA almost won. And, of course, nobody else beat NOTA, so they all dropped off, and then Jeff Neal came in. I'm getting calls. You know, Las Vegas is close. You know, come on, Ernie, come on up now. I made my point. I get it. You know, this is just pointing out my point. Then here comes Gary Johnson. Now, we did a fundraiser for Gary Johnson last Halloween here. Even though we're all a bunch of Ron Paul supporting T-shirt wearing individuals, I told Gary, I go, look, we'll help you and promote and encourage people to do what you're doing. But, you know, just know you got a bunch of Ron Paul people. That's cool. It's all good. You know, so we're very supportive of Gary doing what he's doing. If he dropped that fair tax thing, I mean, give me a break. But the I really want to support what you're doing. It's one less thing I got to do.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that people have been, I guess you could say, the two-party system's been playing us a stranglehold for over a century now.
Hey, they deal with you, or they deal with
us. Ballot access barriers, but they've created
a system where
people don't want to vote. That
here
decreased
we go.
The
voter participation.
In your area,
and,
visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back with Christina Tobin. Oh, the music didn't play. I pushed the wrong button. That's all right. I just want to talk right to her anyway. It's Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. And let me tell you how we do that. And you just go, let me think. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? Didn't even need a government form. You know, now Christina Tobin's out there. She's going, look, if we're going to be independent of and express ourselves and be part, and at a young age, she saw it happen with her father. You walk through it and you're excited. You're going to school and my dad, we're working hard and we're up there. Oh, you mean there's somebody that's really in charge of the choices? Oh, there's somebody else that's really controlling the strings. Oh, it's not the people. Well, I find this foundationally bad. Wrong. I got to do something about it. I need, my entire life, I'm just, truth, justice, and American way. So she's encouraged to start going through this process. She helps any and everybody get on the ballot to be a choice. And, starts challenging the fundamentals of the whole process to the point that now she had the opportunity to do a third-party debate and got the participation of Larry King. Now, this is what I want to hear about. Free and equal came from where? Is that you, or are you the face to it? How did that come about?
Yeah, I'm the founder and the chair. Just a girl, 31 years old, that wants to make the world a better place. And the way we're going to do that is by uniting across the spectrum, recognizing the two-party system has intentionally made us divisive, that is, throughout the last century. And so we need to unite to... I feel the people on the left, even right, of course, that are independent of the system, recognize that we need to cut back government some, to get back to the origins of the Constitution. I don't know if it's 40, 50, 60%. And maybe we would have an efficient government, and transparent government. And, so we're here to create that movement, that base to inspire a lot of people to run in 2014. And, the presidential races are nowhere near as important as the 14 races, the local races, and imagine a whole bunch of people running, independents or whatnot, just candidates that are not owned by private interest money, and running for office, taking back our government. That's truly is going to inspire people to vote again, to want to vote. Maybe you'll actually change your platform and be like, yeah, maybe I will vote because it's worth it to me.
Well, this is what I think
happening in 14.
This is what I think is going to happen. You start it waxes and wanes. People get involved, they don't, and they think they're going to get to express themselves. And when they don't, I don't want to have. But I never let the media, the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, have any kind of role. And me expressing myself, I give you the Lovelution. I mean, man, you didn't see an overpass, didn't have a sign on it. And I'm going, you know what? And I didn't get a permit. So we went around the country encouraging people, look, you don't need them. It's called a freeway overpass. I mean, they'll just take them down. I go, yeah, it cost me a quarter, and a quarter million people saw it. So, I mean, get over it. And we got 300 more we make every Friday. I mean, so this is just, you could just bypass them with activism. You're in their face. And what does the press have to do? They always got a report on something that everybody already knows anyway. They'll put their spin on it. But then they just another example of them lying. So now we have 14 is going to be coming up. And you have free and equal up there saying, look, we're going to give a voice. And what's going to happen? You're going to have online debate. This is why I'm so certain, like we reported yesterday, here comes the UN. They want to control the internet and what you can and can't and whatever. And then we're going to go to satellite-based spaceship. 14 puts up our own satellites and we communicate and whatever. It's over, man. Guys, just get over it. So what happens is you'll have in third-party debates or any debates they're not included in, will dovetail off of what you're doing at the local level and the state level, and they'll just go ahead and have them professionally done out there available for anybody on their tablet and their smartphone, and more people will be watching your debates than the network wants. That's what's going to happen. And there's nothing they can do about it other than, just be thugs and prove your point more. So I'm just going, do you really understand the trailblazing that you're done, or are you just kind of, hey, it just happened, or do you see into the future the effectiveness and the threat you are?
One of my biggest strengths is foresight. I've seen this since I was 18 years of age, that one day the system would be need to unite in order for the world to be a better place. I mean, again, it's the money in politics, the money in media. The reason we have the Patriot Act, SOPA, NDA, the drug war, is again because the Democrats and Republicans are controlled by the money. The day they get elected, they start, campaigning to get reelected all over again. So, yes, I've seen this, fortunately, a long time. And I see with our debates that I see a lot of caucus leaders throughout the United States, hundreds if not thousands, stepping up to the plate from states to counties. And And they'll work together across the spectrum to host those open debates, all those local levels. But even deeper than that, we're going to have a national database listing every single candidate running for office, whether you're running behind a party label or not. I do foresee many more independents in 14 running than there are people within parties. And, all these candidates are going to believe in a lot of things that are similar across the spectrum, ending the Federal Reserve, no Patriot Act, no NDAA, no SOPA. Those sort of things. Get rid of ballot access barriers.
Get rid of the empire overseas. Holy crap.
Voting is great. Proportional representation is great.
You know, this one, we had Dennis Kucinich on, we had two guests. This may be of interest to you. I had Phil Donahue on, and he was all about how disappointed he was with Obama and everything, but we still got to vote Obama. And I'm going, you're still voting? I mean, so that became an interesting thing. He definitely represented the previous generation. We had Dennis Kucinich on. He was so, encouraged that he came on again the following week. And I see Kucinich as kind of a representative of the progressive movement that's going to bypass the traditional, because he was treated the same way by the same forces. So he wants to unite with the revolution in one thing. Ending the empire. And I'm like, we can argue over how many libertarians can dance on the head of a pin and what we're going to do with all this extra money we got in entitlements and domestic spending, whatever, later. Let's stop the empire. Let's stop killing people. Let's stop droning. Let's stop the military base. Let's stop. If we can combine on that and free and equal and everybody can say, can we stop the empire? Then I think we got a chance. But at least to point out who the bad guys are. And it starts with things exactly like what you're doing. I want to know, when did you start getting enough notoriety and enough attention and enough anything to be able to put on to where you got Larry King gave you the time of day? How'd that happen?
Gosh, it's our team. We're grassroots, and somehow Free and Equal's managed to attract some of the best grassroots leaders in the industry. I mean, Zach Carter hopped on board early and just managed to get all this grassroots media. And next thing you know, the international press is taking interest in us. As you know, Al Jazeera covered us throughout the Middle East. RT America has been so supportive throughout Russia. And all this media suddenly started to hop on board. And Larry King actually, ORAC TV got a hold of me. I was just like, you're with Larry King. Does he want to moderate? And they said, sure. We really had tried to get Judge Napolitano to be the moderator, but we learned that Fox won't let them. He's handcuffed.
Hell no.
And for two more years. And Larry King's independent through Aura TV, broke away from CNN. So, here at Free and Equal, we actually just announced our first round of political correspondence for the debate that we're hosting next Monday, 5th of November. Remember the 5th of November at 9 p.m. Eastern. You'll see it on freeandequals.org. freeandequal.org, and I can tell you all those names.
Remember the 5th of November, Free and Equal debate. Oh, that's good, that's good. Everybody was saying, what are you going to do for November 5th, Ernie? I don't know. Maybe I know now. Okay, maybe you know. We'll be right back with Christina Tobin from freeandequal.org. We'll be right back.
MyThings.com.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to talk about is, make sure you get us listed, Freedom's Phoenix, up on your thing, man. Make a note, because I want to definitely, pump the crap out of that. The one thing I wanted to talk to you about here in Arizona is the Prop 121. And I heard that you came and spoke on it, but I don't know what position you took on it. And if you know the backstory on that.
Oh, yeah, because I was definitely going to talk about that, seeing your Arizona base. And Prop 121 is evil. It's evil. It is the root of evil. It's big money, private interest, not only controlling the electoral process, but the two-party system as well, becoming one.
Okay.
Corporate America.
This is all right, let me give you my history and my thing. I read it for the first time. All right, here's the deal. In July 3rd, 1991, I filed a lawsuit with standing from a 90. I ran as an independent, getting the standing because I knew nobody was going to fix this. This is before media ability, anything. So I got standing as a write-in independent candidate in 90 to file the suit. 44 election laws I challenged all the way to the Ninth Circuit, oral argument. They're screaming, yelling. They changed a whole bunch of Ernie laws. Okay. What happened was that I could see what they had done. I came at it from commerce and economics, and my father's coming, all this kind of stuff, and education, and I saw what happened. They eliminate competition before it starts. You must go from this and this and this vetting process by which you are not allowed. And if anybody gets media attention, well, then, of course, they cut that. And I get it. What happened was, is my premise was, the party thing, all that stuff doesn't mean anything. It's all the purpose of, that's why this show is Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. The purpose of government is to defend the individual's rights. That's it. Not party rights, not any of this other crap. So I'm going, all right, now you have the right of association, you know, be able to combine with whoever and do whatever you want. But what my problem was is that, like you experienced with your father, the signature requirements were different. You know, the access was different. Everything was different. It gave an advantage. Even access to databases, all that stuff was different. Now, the Libertarian Party, there was two wings. There was one that I was part of that's kind of, hey, we're free and equal for everybody. And then there were the Libertarians, hey, man, we got in, close the door behind us, and we can be top three parties instead of top two kind of crap. So we're going, okay. So the thing is that when they started doing this initiative, they contacted me. They wanted me on their board of directors and all that kind of crap. And I know who these guys are. They're the ones that forced the parties to allow independents to vote in their primaries when they changed our Constitution about a decade ago. Paul Johnson was Democratic mayor of Phoenix. Grant Woods was Republican attorney general. They are the same ones that came on with this. So I knew they're bad, evil to begin with. Hour and a half, I'm on with their attorneys and Ted Downing, a state senator from Tucson. They knew my spiel and I could be a pain in their ass. And I go, look, let me tell you, you got to address this, 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 and this, or somebody creative like, oh, let's say like an Ernie is going to sue and kick your ass. It's got to be constitutional. My first read through it, I go, it looks like they addressed everything that I brought up. Is that access to the ballot is based on an individual's qualification for the ballot. You take the top voters, like a nonpartisan race, you go to the general. Now,
that's a real open primary. You have six parties, the top, they advance the general, but this is a closed primary.
No, it's not a closed primary. It's open to just individuals, has nothing to do with parties. You would think you would be supportive of that.
No, it's really a closed primary because it's only the top two voters in the primary that advance the general election.
That has nothing to do with parties.
Everything to do with.
Okay, well, that's what we're going to talk about. Get ready. Here we go.
Stranglehold. Yeah, I mean, the money behind it
has already happened.
Okay, well, let's just talk about it.
Yeah, I'll tell you more detail.
You can connect with the Liberty Radio Network via our Facebook page at facebook.lrn.fm. That's facebook.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Declare my independence, no government forms, easy, that's how we do it. All right, here we go. Now, here, you know, we're talking about election law. You know, we got a lot of experiences on this. You know, I remember, you were talking about Richard Winger. I stayed at his home when I testified or I did my oral argument before the Ninth Circuit. You know, Richard followed all our stuff from the beginning. We didn't always agree on everything because there is a line. Let me tell you what the line is. The party is about, you know, the party. And one part that I love the most about the mission statement they want to get rid of is, we, the members of the Libertarian Party, defend the rights of the individual and challenge the cult of the omnipotent state. I'm all about that. I'm a cult challenger, man, you know? So this is the one thing that I want to make sure that we understand. Here in Arizona, there is a Proposition 121, and they want to change the state constitution to where, kind of more like what it used to be. What it used to be is called the direct primary. And that meant the only way you qualified for the general election was by qualifying by having been in the primary. They take the top vote getters, you go to the general. Well, then that changed. And they changed it in the late 70s. They took the entire election law, Title 16, they threw it in the trash, and they rewrote it in the name of anti-communism. They said, it is now illegal to have a communist party in America. So what we did is we created this two-party system. So you have the left one side of one coin of the communist coin and the other side. You know, you may choose from communist A, fascist B. Okay, so they had two-party system. This two-party system is just a euphemism for, you know, the statism. So I'm going, okay, I see what they're doing. When Perot ran in 92, I knew from my lawsuits that there was no mechanism for an independent to get on the ballot in Arizona. And Arizona had the last primary in the nation 7 weeks before the general. And I'm going, he's going to be on the ballot in 49 states and not in Arizona because they forgot to make a provision for an independent to even be on the ballot in Arizona. Well, of course, that got changed. The reason was is because they just kind of forgot that part. And I'm going, okay, why? Because they wanted just the parties. So I'm going, okay. So I challenge this, challenge. Now they keep changing. Finally, this last proposition, they call me and want me to get on. I'm not playing because I knew the guys behind the bad guys. But they address certain things. Now, Christina has a different opinion. We're going to talk about that. But I want to tell you what the proposition does. It makes it to where it's like a city nonpartisan election. Any and everybody and their grandma can qualify equally under whatever to be on the primary. You take the top two vote getters, you go to the general. Well, then you don't have all the parties represented on the general. In 1992, this is what happened. You had the Patriot Party, which was Bo Greitz, Natural Law Party, Dr. Hagelin, the Libertarian Party, Andre Maru at the time. You had United We Stand Party. You had the Green Party. You had Democrats, Republicans. There were some state races where you had two candidates for, you know, that go to the general for House Representative. There was over a dozen candidates on the general election ballot. Not necessarily bad, but the point is that it was the rights of the parties to be represented on the general election ballot as opposed to the rights of the candidate. This is the mistake that a lot of people make. And that's why libertarians are on my case thinking that I would support the right of parties. Yes, you can join a party, but for the party to get some kind of special recognition by the government, is that really their job? So my thing is right of association in the First Amendment. I can be party whatever the heck I want. I want the party. But as it is now, you can, you know, Mao Zedong, Hitler, Stalin can register as a libertarian, get their 50 signatures and be on the ballot representing you. And I'm going, really? Is that how that works? So the Secretary of State, they come to me and they'll say, Ernie, what about this child molesting, raping scumbag over here running as a libertarian? I go, talk to the Secretary of State. They're the ones that have the laws. We don't get to control our party at all. So now all of this stuff I was hoping to get addressed eventually. We look at this law. My first read of it, I go, okay, they haven't pissed me off yet. It's a constitutional thing. But Christina's against it, and I need to understand why. Christina, tell me everything.
Sure, it's totally unconstitutional. I like to keep it very simple. The best weapon the proponents have in support of Prop 121 is confusing the voters. So what it really is Louisiana-style politics. Louisiana's had top two is what I call. They mislead the voters and call it an open primary. They're lying. It's really a closed primary. Louisiana's had it for 30 years, and in 30 years, only one incumbent's been knocked out of office. In California, Free and Equal led the efforts to try to defeat top two. What it means is only the top two vote getters in the primary advance the general election. Yes, everybody can vote for any party line. I'm all for a true open primary. It's okay. It works out well. It's not as good as proportional representation, but I think over 30 states have it where if there's six parties running and the leader of each party advances general election, and people can vote for any line they want. That's okay. But really what it is, you got to look at the money behind it. In California, it's all tied to Charles Munger, the richest man of California, which is tied to Warren Buffett. And through top two in California, unfortunately, it passed in 2010. It's up in Washington State as well. Not one political scientist agreed with the concept that top two, open primary is open. In fact, they all say it's closed.
Okay, why do they say that?
It increases voter participation.
Okay, why do they say that?
It's the big money controlling the electoral system.
No, the money's always, to think money doesn't control it is to be naive. I mean, they're going to do it. As long as you got the power to give favors, here comes the money. Get over it. But I'm like, let's get constitutional first. So you're saying it's a closed primary. I just need to understand why you say that. How is it closed?
Because it eliminates all the other parties. I mean, it only allows two people, two people to advance the general election. It could be two Democrats, two Republicans. That's it. Now in California, since it passed, third parties will cease to exist within two election cycles. Bye-bye Green Party. Bye-bye Libertarian Party. There's a reason why all six parties came out, not only in California, but my understanding, qualified parties, of course, in Arizona as well, came out against top two.
Because it affected the chair of
the Democratic Republican Party of California is that they would lose power within their own party to big money, to private interest, to corporate interest money. It is the biggest threat to our electoral process system that is ever this Prop 121.
See, this is my opinion. One, it has to be constitutional. I mean, that why isn't it?
Well, we have a judicial system that's flawed. Remember, the people in our judicial system are appointed by the Democrats and Republicans who are controlled by big money, right? So the judicial system has not done their job in Washington State. It's been, there's been a lawsuit filed by both the Libertarian Party, the Democratic Party, together against top two out there.
Barry Hess, one of my best friends,
About Access News, says it's unconstitutional as well, and he is right.
Okay. One of my good friends here, Barry Hess, lives a quarter mile from me, ran for governor, Libertarian, three times here. He was on the suit, you know, here in Arizona. He said, yeah, I'm plaintiff, man, let's go kick butt. And, you know, I didn't even read it. Okay, blah, 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 you're still voting. I don't care. Okay? It's all, everybody gets to have their say, and I don't need the government to tell me how you get to have your say. I go and look at it for the first time. I remember having the conversation with these guys, because I don't trust them. I know better than get up, you know, involved with these guys. And, of course, it's going to be money behind it. How the heck they, you know, think they afforded to put it on the ballot? Whether it passes or not is not the point. I am of the opinion that proportional representation would be a much better process.
Yes.
In the future, that's where this will lead. Okay? I can guarantee you. This top thing going, that's not really representing. That's not really working. This party thing was kind of a step toward, yeah, we got various, you know, voices out there, but then the media is controlled by the top two. We don't include them. But then here comes free and equal, and you save the day. But I'm telling you, I see this in the long term as a progression towards proportional representation. And we can talk about that, you know, another time. It's just the percentage of people vote for different parties that are up there. You get that kind of representation, kind of like a parliament thing. But the point is that it still doesn't address the individual. I am like, look, I want to be, I am the crazy tinfoil hat wearing whatever the heck, and I want to have equal access to the ballot, equal chance, equal, equal, equal. And if it's all about the party and what they determine, or if they're controlled by the money on who they put up, and I don't get to participate equally and have equal access to the databases, equal access to the ballot, equal access to the same number of signatures to qualify, equal ability to get access to resources that are available to the public. If I don't get that as an individual, it's unconstitutional, period. And she will disagree with me, maybe.
Vote no on 121.
When we come back.
Liberty Coin and...
Okay, that's my point. All that other stuff is just side effect of the money and blah. We can agree on that. But the first thing is, I'm not trying to fix it with kind of a better unconstitutional thing. It has to be down to the individual. Does an individual have equal access to the ballot? Does an individual have equal access to the resources? Does an individual, that and an individual right of association, am I able to write whatever I am, associate with whatever party, they determine whether I'm endorsed or not, they help or don't, you know, but this political welfare system to where the libertarians get, I mean, I was County chair, I know what it is. I get free, what cost as an independent $250,000 for me to get access, 10 cents a name for everyone on the voter database. I got to pay $250,000 for that list that a libertarian candidate gets for free. That is not free and equal. If I got to 9.5 days that when I filed my lawsuit, I had 9.5 days to get twice as many signatures. They made it 9.5 days, so I only got 1 weekend to get on the ballot as an independent. Not free and equal. This party thing is so much for this more control of eliminating people from the process that I mean, that's the first thing I look for.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, to end on the note where we were talking before, I agree with you about opening the elections. You're a big supporter of proportional representation, and I happen to have a petitioning company that's gathered over 1 million signatures to get candidates on the ballot across the spectrum.
The proportional representation requires party.
Well, I mean, I definitely proportional representation is something that's supportive. I don't know what direction the future is going to go. And I know right now we have parties and people support the concept of proportional representation.
Well,
I know in 2013.
I understand, but think about it. As an individual, I'm going up against proportional representation of a party. And as an individual, I don't want to be part of a party. I'm libertarian, man. Everybody can kiss it. I'm just going to go myself and proportional represent me. Am I allowed to participate? Or do I have to form a party and have another human being with me to be able to express myself as an individual?
Yeah, I mean, you have a good point. I like to focus more on instant runoff voting. That's what we did for the debate, and then eliminating the spoiler effect. As far as PR, it's a great thing, but is our system going to transition over to being just independents? Yeah, probably. And
sooner or later.
Will PR be relevant then? Maybe not. But under the current system, it's a great thing.
The only problem with instant runoff, I mean, it can be audited, but it really needs computers, you know? And, you know, we'll talk about instant runoff because I, you know, if I meet my requirements, it'd probably be more of that. And so, you know, everybody's second choice wins, you know, which is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. But the we're going to go ahead and keep drilling on this because I don't want to be in a position to where later on it's going to be the next 18-year-old that's all interested in this comes up and finds the flaw in the system of proportional representation. You go, hey, wait. I'm the individual kind of, I'm not allowed. I thought that was a Constitution concept, America kind of, and you guys did this to me. And then they spend 10 years, you know, freer and equaler, you know?
Yeah, it's, I hear you. It's going to be a great, it's, well, you know, I like to focus on the good. First thing we have to do is squash top two and the Prop 121. And
well, I just want to make sure we're doing it for the right reason. You know, we'll discuss it. But
Trust me, it's evil. Trust me.
It's got evil people behind it. You know, that's a whole other thing. But let's go ahead and, because they have their own interest. I get it.
All right. You know the money behind it. You saw the people who contacted you. They have a history. So. Says it all right there.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story.
Same old story, same old song and dance. Yeah, I've heard this before. Over and 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 over. And the money is going. You know, in 1994, I was running for Secretary of State. John Buttrick, now a federal magistrate, judge. He went to be a judge appointed by, and they wanted to get him out of politics. You know, I mean, you know, he was a good candidate for governor. And what happened, he made the point. He goes, you know, blah, blah, they do this, and they do that, and the power of, and they're getting, and he's going, you know, let me tell you. You're never going to get the money out of politics as long as you have the power in politics. You got the power to give some kind of tax break. You got the power to give some goodies. You got the power to do a contract. Guess what? Here come the money. You want to get rid of the money? Get rid of the power. You know, one big thing is eliminate the military-industrial New World Order empire of. That's one thing. So I'm going, okay, can we stop that? So we might be working with Kucinich on that in the next year. He wants to, you know, can we, you know, have peace? And I'm sure, you know, Love Illusionary and Dr. Paul and everybody, we go, ooh, let's do that peace thing. See what happens. We can worry about how much we carve up the money left over later, you know, which there ain't going to be any anyway. But so I'm going, okay, all right. So this is, you know, ranked choice voting may be an improvement. That still requires parties. You know, you got to have this, you know, representation percentage of parties. You know, then there's instant runoff. Well, that requires computers. So, but you can still audit it. So instant runoff, I'm probably a bigger fan of that. It's like, you know, if you that guy doesn't win that you voted for, then it goes to your second choice and so on. And it kind of, you know, filters out. Now, I benefited from that in national chair runs. They had that national chair from all the states came together in Texas. And it was me and Wayne Allen Root and the other guys and so on. And I won. And they're going, we don't like that one anymore. We need to do something else. I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought. So this is instant runoff is another option. But that's one thing that we could spend another hour on how we would fix it. But Christina, I know she wants to have the final word on this, that this Prop 121, this top two thing is evil, regardless of whether it be constitutional muster or not. It's still evil because the guy's behind it.
Yeah, Ernie, there's a reason why we held a panel discussion at the Goldwater Institute a couple of weeks ago. And the president of the League of Women Voters, Barbara Klein, came out. She's our facilitator against Prop 121. The Goldwater Institute against Prop 121. Even the executive director of the Democratic Party sat on that panel with the head of the Republican.
Every single one of these people have their own interest in the parties. They have, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, put anything past them as their own interest anyway.
I disagree. What will happen under top two is that the parties will lose control within their own party to big money. So what we have to do is squash top two first and then reform the system by getting a whole bunch of independents to run for 2014.
Christina, when you say that, you're...
work, but top two is the wrong direction. No on Prop 121.
When you say that, you're going, you know, the parties would lose their power against the big business. I'm like, what, you think big business doesn't control the parties now? Where you been?
Yeah, well, the independents, the individuals can't come and take the power back from the parties if the parties are completely controlled by big corporate special interests.
I give you the Ron Paul Lovelution where they came in and taken over the parties. That's one reason. I told them, I said, let me tell you why they're doing this. The serfs are inside the castle walls. They would rather raise the castle than turn it over to the people to be able to take this over.
Prop 121 is turning it over to the people, the wealthiest people at the very top are behind that. Warren Buffett. You could go really high up to Rockefeller, Rothschild. If you really trust those guys, prop, you know, vote yes on 121. If you, you know, trust corporate money, if you trust that AT&T and Hewlett Packard and Netflix and Pacific Life Insurance are in our best interests, and Charles Munger, you know, Warren Buffett, you know, vote yes on 121. But
meaningful
elections is the reason we're against it. So check it out more at freeandequal.org. Let's squash that, and then let's unite across the spectrum to shift our system back to the origins of the Constitution, what our forefathers would want.
Parties?
No, to independence. And you're right. I don't know in proportional representation. I get you on that. But instant runoff voting is a great thing. It gets rid of that wasted vote. But first we've got to run for office in 14 as independents. Again, I don't believe parties work. There's a reason the Constitution doesn't mention parties nor corporations, because they simply don't work. The independents are the key, the youth running, and social networking technology, like you said, is so key. And that's why this presidential debate we're having on November 5th has gotten so much exposure, because of social networking. The last one we did, moderated by Larry King, was top 10 trending on Twitter for a good reason. And worldwide coverage, millions if not more, we don't even know, tons, millions and millions of more people watched it. So check out our debate on November 5th, freeandequal.org at 9 p.m. Remember the 5th of November at 9 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to have a really awesome crew there, a whole bunch of panel correspondents opening up ahead of time as well.
Do you have a big name moderator you're willing to announce, or you got somebody hooked up, or what?
Not yet, but today we just announced our political correspondents, Amber Lyon, Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist. We have Sam Cedar, comedian, writer, actor out in New York, big name there. Tom Hartman, New York best-selling author through host of Big Picture, and Maitha Alhausen. So we've got this great first round of political correspondents. We're expecting others. We've got Matt Welch with Reason Magazine as well. So it's going to be a very interactive.
Well, why not just you as moderator? Heck, you were up there earlier, Kim. Do you need another person? Is that required?
It's kind of interesting. All these political correspondents are going to be getting questions from their own supporters throughout the weekends, and they're going to personally ask the questions to the presidential candidates. So the dynamics are changing. We want the media to be connected with their constituents, and these are all good media outlets that are going to be a part, correspondents, a part of this debate. And it's going to be really exciting. We're going to have foreign domestic issues. We've got so much international. I think like a dozen countries already confirmed to cover us throughout the world. Sweden, Switzerland, Germany, China. I mean, you name it, Russia, on and on. It's amazing. And we're expecting a lot of U.S. media to hop on board over the weekend and last minute Monday as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, I wouldn't bust a gut on having that. I mean, you party enough. You know, you did your job. You got a bunch of these others. You got enough attention. I don't know why you would, and certainly I wouldn't, you know, capitulate to any demands to get some face up there. Screw them. You know, I mean, I'm going to watch it regardless anyway, so I don't care.
Thank you so much.
Well, this is, you know, and we'll promote it and have a big time. You know, I'm kind of surprised that you didn't get, maybe you do. Has there been a big November 5th tie-in on this? You know, the meme started, the artwork?
For what now?
For it being the 5th of November. Remember.
We're actually going to kick that off today. You have great foresight yourself. I really enjoyed speaking with you. I'm learning from you, too, which is so cool. I look forward to meeting you in Phoenix soon.
Get your butt over here. We party.
Yeah, we do. We're definitely going to party. We're going to have a definitely the 5th of November motto kicking out. And We're asking everybody to call the mainstream press as well. I mean, some of them covered us the last debate, CNN, Washington Post, even C-SPAN. So it's going to be an exciting, fun-filled weekend. And I'm actually right now driving to D.C. From Chicago to meet at the studio. And it's going to be really interactive. We're going to have the candidates and myself and whatnot in the actual studio. But all the press is going to be at the hotel next door, big screen, maybe some supporters.
Okay, what city is this going to be in?
Washington, D.C., at the state-of-the-art studio, RT America.
Oh, yeah, that's right. How did the KGB get involved in this thing?
Oh, man, you know what? They're giving an open, neutral feed. They're letting us run it the way we want, a neutral backdrop. Really good for them.
You know how this is how I see RT. You know, one, they from Russia Today, they go to RT.com. You know, when Adam went over there, Adam Kokesh, and doing, we were paying attention and so on. And you have a lot of the great guys, you know, Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell. I've been on there myself and so on. And I go, you know, I know that Putin and the Russian government and the intelligence community, they're sitting there laughing their ass off because they had to deal with the truth that was the voice of America that was beating the crap out of the Eastern Bloc as we're going to the people and telling them whatever, you know, the truth is and out there and doing, and that's the most powerful weapon. And they're going, oh, yeah, right back at you. Okay? Here we go with RT, and all we got to do is show what you're really doing. The people will know what's going on, and they're our greatest, asset and whatever. You know, and I'm just going, and I'm like, cool. You know, right on. You know, somebody, right on. So I say, bring it on, RT. And besides that, they got a lot of good-looking women. I like the good-looking women part. That's good.
Well, you know, Ernie, here's to a national, peaceful, powerful movement across the spectrum. Not only are we going to have that national database, but we're going to have a lot of conferences next year uniting honest media, organizations, leaders, people running for office, and we're going to unite to take back our government, ship back to the original Constitution. We are here. I'm going to be working full-time for Free Nico for the rest of my life. And I'm
all right.
31.
I'm glad you're there. One less thing I got to do. But I tell you, you know, I'm
working with you.
I definitely got, you know, an opinion on this stuff. I've been doing this too. And my thing is, the first litmus test, how does it treat the individual? Not the parties, not the government, not the corporation, not the individual. Are they going to take it? Advantage of me, yeah, maybe, whatever. First thing, do I as an individual have equal access, free and equal access, my voice out there being, in supportive of the process by which we get represented? Yes or no?
Take control.
Okay, that's my spiel. Now, we can be a great asset and help you guys. We're, the grapevine root of a whole bunch of stuff. But the thing is that I really want, to be clear. I understand. I know the guy. That's why I wouldn't have anything to do with it. Hell, it's almost like I wrote the thing. I read it and I go, okay, well, this is pretty much everything I was, demanding in my lawsuit. Equal access for the individual. The problem, and you still got to address that the parties still have representation on endorsement or not of the individuals. Do they get the, be blah, 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 blah. They addressed everything. They must have recorded everything that I said in my conversation with these guys because they addressed it. But I know, guarantee, that it's all just a mechanism by which the big bad guys with the money can still maintain control. I know that.
Ernie, I'm all for, parties losing their power, but not to bigger money. It's got to be the other way around to the independents, the individuals running for office.
You're
so we got to go that direction.
I understand your point, but it's like you think that the parties have power now. I mean, I give you Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
They don't, but it's even worse under Prop 121. Who would have thought it could be worse?
Good! I mean, it's got to get to the point to where people understand the fundamental wrong.
No, Ernie, the power, not good in the sense, if the power is already to the big money, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, private interests, special interests, right? They're controlling the parties, right?
Because their power is in government. The power was always to defend individual rights, not all this other shit.
Imagine the parties having absolutely no say whatsoever under big money. Like, it's
doesn't matter.
Bad. It's already 99% of the way there. Imagine it being 100% under 121.
Let me tell you what I'm going to be afraid. You're going to get exactly what you want, and it's going to be as bad or worse. I mean, it doesn't matter. The money will find a way to take and use and wield the power, the sword.
We shine a light on it in our national database. We're going to shine a light all on that money, whether it's union, corporate, and let the people decide. Let them see the candidates, whether they're hiding behind a party label or even more so, lots of them running as independents. They can see them as individuals, the way our forefather drafted the Constitution, the way we're supposed to see our system. And that's what our entire national database is going to do.
Okay, I'm hip. Now, let me ask you this question. Campaign finance reform. I run against McCain. Well, that's all big McCain-Feingold, right? So I'm making fun of this. I'm going, seriously? You think that seriously? I travel on the freeways here, big giant billboards. We love John McCain, paid for by, you know, Fred and Ethel Murth, because we can. It's First Amendment. We get to do what we want. That was the point. I'm going, look, we can do what we want, the Lovolution thing. They're like, well, how much money? I go, you know what? I didn't fill out a freaking form. Not going to. Come get me. Make my freaking day. I go, because it's called the First Amendment. That's during 92. The Perot, Hughes, and Luce comes here to meet with me. And they're like, Ernie, we need to get you into the collective here and on the list and be part of, and so we can put you on our forms. I go, you're confusing me with someone who gives a crap about putting me on forms. I go, dude, go do what you want. I don't care. You know, this is I get to do whatever the hell I want, and I'm not going through your process. So I ask you this question. We get into independent everything that you want. And you'll have individuals go out there and spend a gazillion dollars. Should they be limited?
Oh, Ernie, the reason we have all these campaign finance laws is so simple. Break it down. Two-party systems created it, the flawed judicial system. So how do we create transparency and call out that maybe Citizens United may not be the best thing, all these campaign finances laws, ballot access and so on, Federal Election Commission Act, is by driving a stake through the heart of the system and having a whole bunch of independents run and take back our government in 14. It's that simple. We can either get distracted,
or I, as an individual, spend $1 million on a house local race, and because I can, I give it to this guy. Hell, I just do it. Hell, I do what I just did.
I gotta get driving to DC soon. How much longer are we on this show?
No, we're done.
Oh, okay, I could talk to you for hours. Well, but I got come back to meet with the studio.
Well, I come back at
6 today.
I come back at 6 minutes after. So in 4 minutes, I gotta say goodbye anyway. I'm just taking.
Am I gonna
advantage.
Meet you in Phoenix soon? I hear awesome things about you from Zach. You're cool.
No, I'm
knowledgeable.
Thank I'm not sitting on my hands. I'm not. You know, I've been doing this activism thing for 20-something years. My wife and kids and I and everything for one reason: grandkids. See, I understand. I'm going in for the long haul, and I understand that. I understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. It's just that I can see in the future that the individual is always set to the side in order to get some kind of short-term gain, and because they know who the bad guys are and how they're going to wield the sword against and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, whoa, 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 time out. Let me tell you what's going to happen. And I told these guys when I was talking to their attorneys, I go, whatever you put in there, if you restrict the right and ability of the individual to be fair and equal in this process, I don't give a crap what you do in the process, but if you do it to where I can't equally have access, I am all over your shit. You're going to have a lawsuit from Ernie. Guarantee it. And they're like, okay. So, of course, they crafted it to maintain the constitutionality, but they'll do exactly what you're saying. Why? Because the power is there. They want to wield the power, the force of government. I go after a cultural thing. I'm like, you're still voting? That is not where the change is going to come from. That doesn't mean I don't participate in the election process. You know, my partner in the Freedom Summit that we do, where Ron Paul has spoken at 3 of our Freedom Summits. We have, who's my partner? Mark Victor. He's running for U.S. Senate against Flake and Carmona. He's going to cost Flake this election, maybe, and they're freaked out. You know, why do we do that? Mark doesn't buy to get him to register to vote just to run.
Hey, you know what happened over top two in Washington State when it passed?
What?
There used to be dozens of people who ran for office. Now there's a few. There are only 2 third-party candidates that advanced the general election. Why? Because they ran in uncontested races. So it totally sterilizes political cleansing. And as we know in California,
my point is it's already sterilized. All that was just.
We don't want it to be worse, Ernie. We want it to be better.
No.
So we have to squash this.
Let me tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to prove it to you in 14. I want to go ahead. Whatever the criteria, if this thing passes, that's when I really get involved. I'm going to come and say, okay, you guys want to play equal? Here we go. Because I consider the election is the primary because of all the voices. That is the election. You know, this other stuff.
I got to shoot you over the constitutional arguments after the election.
Please.
I'll try to remember to do that.
Please. And I will counter. All right. Well, we're on the same side, Christina. Seriously.
Oh, it keeps you interesting.
Yeah. No, we're on the same side here. I'm just, you know, been working at it for a long time, but I understand your point. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, keep it to where it'll stand up. All right.
You know, Ernie, I just wanted to end on the note that, you know, just that positive synergy is what's going to help us break through. So don't let that system win being cynical. And you have this fun, positive side too. I see it for sure. But
that's really
going to be key for 13.
Oh, no. I take advantage. I've been, how do you think I keep doing this for 20 years? If I'm not having fun, I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah, same here for the rest of my life. So
all right, well, I look forward to seeing you. When are you going to be in Phoenix?
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you in Phoenix as well, man.
When are you going
to
be coming?
For having me on. I don't know. When are we going to be in Phoenix? Swing by on the way to California? Yeah, so like right after the election.
Come in. We're going to have a party.
D.C. to California because I'm moving to California. Packed up my place in Illinois.
We'll have a party. Party. Christina Tobin here, Fear and Equal. Party. We'll get done in a bunch of, you know, it's a big giant party. Guaranteed. Get you on a stage and, you know, party.
Party of individuals. Yeah.
Do it. All right, we'll see you, Christina. Stay in touch.
Take care, Ernie. Bye.
Doyle Redlin for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh! When do you get to be an anarchist? You know, when does that happen? When you kind of develop? You know, some of us are anarchists on a daily basis. You're the daily anarchist, Seth King. You know, we got Seth King on dailyanarchist.com. That means we got to know how to spell anarchist. And some of us need to know how to spell daily. Okay, DailyAnarchist. Anarchist. AnarchistDot com. Daily Anarchist, Seth King. We're going to go through the life of an anarchist. Starts, you know, in you know, like junior high, you're in elementary school, young boy, you kind of got, you know, you got a father that's kind of, you know, paying attention to things. He takes the time to explain it to you. I have my four kids and my four grandkids so far, and I'm kind of, you know, making sure they get the fundamentals, thou shalt not aggress. You know you're winning when they're 6 years old and they go, he aggressed against me, he initiated force, you know, that kind of stuff. They understand the concept. Well, of course, they get into school and the government and the man and anywhere else, and they go, wow, man, there's a bunch of aggressors out here, you know. So this is a fundamental understanding that Seth came up with, and it changed his life. As he goes through things like, you know, September 11th, you know what's coming. You know, you see different campaigns, you know what's coming. You know, so we're going to talk about this as we build into how a daily anarchist is born. So we're going to go ahead and go through that. But I talked to Christina Tobin off air. And we disagree on Prop 120. You know, I know the bad guys are behind this, but I told them, I go, you do this, it better be constitutional, or independent little old Ernie is going to be a real pain in your butt. And as we see how it's applied in different laws and the Constitution, because you know they're going to do whatever they want to do. It's how they control the sort of force. You know, I know that. You know, and she does, but we're on the same side. Christina's going to be coming to Phoenix here in right after the election, traveling to or from California, or she's driving through. We're going to have a party. Big party. Everybody would go, oh, it's a consolidation of forces. And she's all about the parties, all about individuals being able to run for all about independence on the ballot, all about. And then there are some people that are just like, you know, you're still voting? You know, and I'm definitely sympathetic to that. Seth, I got you there?
Yes, you do.
Okay, Seth, get up to the microphone here so we can get some volume out of you.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay, now, tell me. Daily anarchist. You become an anarchist, and we got to find out how that happened. All right. So let's go ahead and start off with, you know, you're a young man. I like this bio that you sent me. It's a heck. It should be an article. You know, matter of fact, I think you should write an article today. Use this, and we'll put it in the magazine tonight. So go ahead and I was born. Start there, and let's go ahead and build up to this anarchy thing, because I definitely want to talk about dailyanarchist.com. But let's go ahead and start off with how you made this transition.
Okay, well, I was born in 1981, and both of my parents are very libertarian-leaning. I don't know if they necessarily, you know, called themselves libertarians when I was five, but they, you know, they saw the reality a little bit more than what it was. You know, they understood the evils of the drug war, and they didn't like, you know, blue laws like prostitution, these other things. They just felt that the government had no business regulating people's individual lives like that. And they taught me this, and for whatever reason, I just always really enjoyed these topics and debating these topics. And so throughout school, I would debate these topics as a little kid with my teacher, you know, and other students and stuff like that. And sometimes I would get some teachers that really enjoyed debating back with me, even though I was really young. And that carried with me pretty much all the way through, you know, high school. But as time went on, I think it was 1995 or something, 93, when the Brady Bill got passed and the assault weapons ban. That was when my father and I really kind of got kicked into high gear like activists. And we joined the John Birch Society, you know, because at the time that was, you know, what my father discovered. Some, I don't know how he discovered it. I think he was reading an article in the letters to the editor of the newspaper. And the author there, he called one day and he said, "Hey, where do you get your information from?" And he said, "Oh, I get the, you know, my information from the New American and the John Birch Society." So we started going to Birch meetings and just learning all about, you know, everything going through the Birch Society.
I don't want to interrupt your stream. This is really good. We got a bad feedback in the break. I just want to let the audience know that we're going to go ahead and try a different line, or maybe even do a Skype or so on. But we can understand you, so please continue.
Okay, great. So anyways, you know, learn about all the you know, New World Order stuff going on with the Birch Society. And then, you know, September 11th came and went, and I knew exactly, like you said, I knew exactly what was going to come down as a result of that. And then over time, Ron Paul ran for president in 2007, and I had known about Ron Paul since 1998, and I knew he was probably the only only congressman worth any, you know, worth anything. And so I started to get behind him. I started to read all his books because I wanted to make sure that, you know, I really liked him, and I vigorously studied his voting record in Congress. And the more I read, the more I, you know, liked. And so I got behind him 100% in the 2008 campaign, donated the maximum amount of $2,300, went door to door selling his books, sold all of his books, sold dozens of them, and was a real pain in the butt to my you know, family and friends, constantly preaching about Ron Paul. And then shortly after the 2008 campaign is when I converted to anarchism. And the way I did that was, you know, I go to lewrockwell.com every day, and you know, its headline is anti-state, you know, anti-war, pro-market. And it took me literally 2 years of going there every day before I realized, well, these people are all anarchists. Like, even though it said anti-state, I just didn't, you know, it didn't really click that they were really anarchists. And so after, you know, after 2 years of going to lewrockwell.com and the whole Ron Paul campaign, you know, I wrote Walter Block, and I asked him. I said, "Hey, you know, you've described yourself as an anarcho-capitalist. What is that? What does that mean? And what do I need to read in order to get to where you're at now? Because I, you know, love to read, and that was how
the news."
Yeah, yeah. that would be obvious for some people, but it wasn't that obvious for me. So he recommended a couple of Murray Rothbard's books, namely For a New Liberty and The Ethics of Liberty. So I ordered those online right away, and that was right around the same time that the Campaign for Liberty was doing their regional conference in Las Vegas that I went to. And I was, you know, active in the Campaign for Liberty at the time. That was right after the 2008 campaign. And I met Dr. Tom Woods in person, and I asked him, "Hey, you know, you've self-described as an anarchist as well. What book is it going to take for me to get to be an anarchist?" And he said, "You should read Democracy, the God That Failed by Hans Hermann Hoppe." And so I ordered that online, and they all pretty much came in at the same time. And those three books I devoured in no time. And actually, I was converted after the first book, For a New Liberty, but all three of them just really reinforced the fact that the government is an unnecessary evil, and every quote-unquote service that it provides us can be done more efficiently and qualitatively by the free market.
You know, we had Hans Hermann Hoppe as one of the speakers at our Freedom Summit. And when he came to the Freedom Summit, it was interesting that he made the advocacy for monarchy. He's going, hey, man, a king's way better than this other thing. At least they want to make money. You know, at least they're going to try and retain their wealth and go on. Oh, and there's only one guy to take out. You know, so I'm going, you know, this is interesting. We're going to go ahead and fix your the signal here. We got bad feedback, and I want to give a quality signal for the archive. But we'll go ahead and we'll be back with Seth in just a little bit. We're going to break here in just a minute. But what I want to do is make sure that we understand the progression of a young man that is aware. You know, his family's where we'll talk about his relationship with his father and what he taught him. We'll talk about, you know, how he was able to make the transition into understanding that, you know what? This whole thing, this whole concept of having a government to defend your rights, that's the promise they make, but they always break the promise. They're always, oh, we're going to save you, protect you, something, be afeared, and you need us because, and then they become the instrument by which all our rights are taken away.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Wow! 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 I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good. So good. Yeah. I got Seth King on. He did help me understand the next generation of how they're going to, you know, not take over the world, just make sure nobody else does. You know, that is what's really important. We got the phone thing fixed, okay? We switched phones on them. It sounds mucho better. Okay, Seth, I got you there?
Yes, you do.
Yay! It sounds better. Okay. Now, this is what I want to get to. You went through this process, and in the static, people kind of picked up the idea that, you know, yeah, you're aware. You start going through the process. Your father, you know, is open-minded and kind of had you thinking a certain way and noticing things to begin with. All of a sudden, you get to the point where, you know, Ron Paul, ooh, what he said, and you go through this, and then you kind of, yeah, you spend a lot of time on Lou Rockwell, maybe Mises and so on, Tom Woods and Walter Block, and these guys say, you need to read these three books. Boom, I'm an anarchist, okay? Now, does an anarchist mean you're not politically involved? You're not advocating for a philosophical correction to whatever? I mean, you're being dailyanarchist.com. You're out there writing, doing, promoting. What are you promoting? If you're not doing politics, well, you obviously, then you must be sitting on your couch and not doing anything.
No, you know, I'm promoting the message now instead of promoting political parties or candidates or, you know, elections or anything like that. There are anarchists, you know, anarcho-capitalists who still vote and take part in the process. And I'm kind of a to-each-their-own sort of a person. If that's what they feel they need to do, I don't have any problems with that. But for me personally, right when I converted to anarchism, it just dawned on me that the state really is, you know, a criminal organization, and I don't see any reason for me to be a part of it at all. And if I continue to vote and I continue to, you know, prop up other politicians and try and get people active in the process, I'm really just legitimizing the entire system. And I want to delegitimize this system in people's minds. So,
okay, where are you at? What state?
I'm in New Hampshire. I moved for the Free State Project.
Ah, okay. So you're not helping the Free State Project people out there running for office?
No, I'm not. I haven't done any of that. I'm just here because I know that, you know, there's strength in numbers, and the closer I am with other, you know, liberty activists, the more likely we are to be able to do things together that you can't do when you're, you know, the only activist, you know, in 100 miles.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of guys out there that are, you know, well, I don't want to say his name, but his initials are Ian Freeman. And he says that, you know, if you're going to be out there, you need to be participating in the political process. I mean, are you getting any kind of negative waves from these guys?
No, I try and keep my nose clean. There's definitely a lot of good-natured, I'd say, infighting, you know, between anarchists. A lot of them say, hey, you got to get out there and be political and you know, reform the system. And others just want to opt out completely. And there's definitely serious arguments going on between, you know, between those two factions. And I think those are okay arguments. It doesn't bother me. So when I meet somebody, I don't really get down on them. I don't get in their face, hey, you need to stop voting and stuff like that. If I did, then it would open me up to more criticism. But I try and just, you know, it's a choose-your-own-adventure sort of world. That's my idea.
You know, the thing is, I'm in a weird position. You know, I've always run for office. There's hardly an election year goes by, I think, since 1990. I think I just campaign managed in 02, and I didn't run in 10 because I was doing, you know, national party stuff. But, you know, I'm all the other ones, I was a candidate. I mean, you know, for 20-something years, that means I've had a bunch of races, but I never worried about vote totals. I never went. It was an opportunity to get attention. Can an anarchist still be an anarchist and use the ballot access or support a candidate, you know, a freedom-oriented candidate like Ian to you know, help them spread the message? Or is that counter to what you're trying to do?
I think you can. I think that any way you can spread the message is probably beneficial, you know. And sometimes, you know, my attitude is I think the message gets watered down a little bit when you're running for office because you're spending more time having to pump up an individual candidate, a politician, so to speak, and then you end up having to talk about his, you know, what kind of grades he got in high school and stuff like that instead of actually talking about the message. So yeah, I mean, as long as you get the message out there, I think you're doing a net positive. But we have several anarcho-capitalists in the state house here in New Hampshire. So, I mean, they're doing their own thing, and I think they're definitely doing a lot of good. There's no doubt about that. For me personally, I find that it's a lot easier to promote anarchism when I don't have to turn around and say, oh, by the way, vote for this guy. You know, that to me just seems too weird.
If you can provide the cultural understanding, you know, the people they're looking for, you know, like Stefan would say, you know, where's the gun in the room? I mean, you know, that kind of thing. You can do accomplish that. All the other stuff is a side effect. Vote totals are a side effect. Participation is a side effect. Candidates are a side effect. Party platforms are a side effect of that. You know, you have to have a cultural understanding of what the proper role of just your responsibilities as an individual human being and how to determine who the bad guys are. How do you determine who the bad guys are?
How do I determine who the bad guys are?
You know, these guys are bad because what?
Well, I don't know. There's definitely varying shades of bad. You know, there's mediocre bad guys, and those are the ones who... they might not be holding the gun in the room. They might not even work for the government, but they, you know, they legitimize the initiation of force against peaceful people. Those are mediocre bad guys. And then you have real hardcore bad guys, and I think the worst bad guys are the police and the military. They're even worse than the judges and the politicians, you know, because they're the ones that literally go to your door, break down your door, put a gun in your face, and kidnap you for, you know, victimless crimes, you know, and it's the police or it's the military that drop bombs on people. I mean, they are the worst, you know. So no, I have no, you know, no love affair for the cops and the military. But at the same time, you know, when I see somebody, it's like you know, you have that quote from The Matrix, you know, in your starter. It's like The Matrix, and that is when you're walking through town, you know that all of these people.
If they haven't been unplugged, they're the enemy.
Exactly. If they haven't been unplugged, they're still the enemy, you know, because they'll turn on you. They'll drop the dime for whatever reason if that's what the government tells them to do, you know.
You know, I want to make sure that, you know, we transition towards a better, higher form of human beings. And there are, if you look out over history, you can see that that's been the promise, that's been the desire, that's been, you know, the, I'd say the trend. You know, more and more the individual is empowered, but it's more not because somebody granted it, it's because we took it. It's because we invented it. We got a printing press. We got the internet. We got communication. We got, you know, the ability to make our own power and get off the grid. I mean, we're getting off the grid. And if we don't have a fundamental understanding of how we should live or can or should be allowed to live as individuals, you know, it's just going to continue to get worse. And that's why it's important to have someone like you out there advocating, you know, this individual leave me alone-ism. And I'm going, okay. How successful have you been? I mean, you know, are you... You know, we'll talk about that when we come back. It's a good thing to leave it on in this segment. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Seth King about the reach of anarchist philosophy, not just from his efforts, but the community that he belongs to. Can you belong to a community and be an anarchist? Voluntarily. We'll be right back on Declare Your Independence with me and DailyAnarchist.com, Seth King. Forever.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Who is it?
What are they?
Sentient programs. Anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone, and they are no one. They are guarding all the doors, they are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neo. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
Their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
Why won't you have to? Why? Because by that time, by the time we get to the where, everybody, the culture will have shifted to the point to where we just, you know, take off that old code of statism and just, you know, be left alone. You know, there'd be always be somebody go, no, I'm in charge. I pulled Excalibur from the rock. I'm the guy in charge now. Me. I got bigger guns. I got a spaceship, de la orbiting. What? All that stuff doesn't matter if the people understand. How do we do that? Do we do it by running for office? Do we do it? You can. You know, but not, I'll rule you better. You know, it's you can use all kinds of mechanisms by which to get people to even think. And with a site like DailyAnarchist.com, you would think that Seth King has a plan, all right? Well, what are some of the plans that you have that you advocate to get off of the out of the system, off of the man's grit?
Well, once you've come to the conclusion of anarchism, you really just see the government as a criminal organization. And once you do that, you realize it's just a threat, okay? So just put yourself into a different a time frame. Maybe if you go back a few thousand years ago, we were living in the jungle, you had threats, you know, like lion. Okay, lion was probably your biggest threat at the time. So what you need to do is you just need to figure out how to, you know, get by your day-to-day activities, try and progress, make your life better, but at the same time avoid the lions. And you don't necessarily have to go fighting the lions, you know, you don't have to go kill them, but you just avoid them and work to make yourself, you know, impervious to their strength. And nowadays, people don't get eaten by lions like they used to. And so it's the same thing with the state. You know, you don't have to go out. I don't believe you have to go out and confront them on a daily basis. I think if we ignore them and work to, work to build alternative institutions, you know, we can eventually abolish the state.
Yeah, take over all their habitat.
Right. And the thing is, a lot of people, you know, they get a really militant attitude. More minarchists than anarchists, I would say, but they get a militant, you know, attitude, which is eventually they're going to have a civil war with the federal government. Okay, and I understand it, and maybe they're right. Okay, but the thing is I feel like they're totally wrong if they're still dependent on using, for example, the government's money. If they're still using central bank Federal Reserve notes, you know, what are you rebelling against? You're still totally dependent on that system. So until you can, you know, until you have alternate institutions that you can rely on, like, for example, money, if, you know, then there's no point in trying to combat the state, you know. So that's why I, you know, talk a lot about you know, Bitcoin on my website, because Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin's been around since 2009, and for the first 2 years it was out, I thought it was a ridiculous idea, and I advocated against it until, you know, after some time I realized, you know, maybe I'm bad-mouthing this thing and I don't fully know what I'm talking about. And so I finally decided to really look into Bitcoin and give it an honest, open assessment. And after I did, I really fell in love with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is really an amazing currency, and I believe it's the magic bullet that's going to abolish the state and change the world. Because, you know, like they say, money is the root of all evil, and as a capitalist, we kind of go, ah, whatever, that's ridiculous. But, you know, if you really think about it, the state and all of its evils is totally built upon their fiat money. They can print it at will, and they can constantly steal endless amounts of wealth from the entire world just by, you know, adding a few digits on a keyboard stroke. You know?
It was important to me to be able to close the loop between cash to Bitcoin, Bitcoin to precious metals. And we were able to do that with BitInstant. We go up and I said, all right, how do I do this? Boom. I went down to the bank. I could have gone to a Walmart or a CVG pharmacy or CVS, whatever the heck it is. You know, a 7-Eleven, MoneyGram, whatever. You take and you put the cash and transfer it to here. Okay, boom. They did it. All right. Now I got Bitcoins. So Bitcoins, I go down to Liberty Coin Precious Metals in Scottsdale, paid for silver and Bitcoin, got my silver. Once you close that loop like that, now, of course, I can put the silver back into cash. But I go, wow, okay, now we can be off the grid. Now, the point is, though, is that I am of the opinion that Bitcoin is totally dependent on math that I don't understand. Encryption that I don't understand. High level algorithm, de la bit, you know, characters. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's, ooh, that's good. How do you know that? Oh, because somebody said and I read it on the internet someplace. So I'm going, so what you're saying is that it's math. Somebody can take all that and say, oh, now the money's all mine. Nah, they couldn't do that because of the math's hard. It costs too much to do it. Says who? Says them. I'm going, right. Okay. So it may be a good currency. I'm not sure I want to keep all my wealth there. The fact
and
that,
so what I tell people with that, and you make a valid argument, I still do buy into the math argument, but what you're essentially saying is, you know, I don't want to have, you know, my entire life savings wrapped up in Bitcoin.
Hell
no. That makes perfect
no.
sense. And what I tell people is, look, if you get to the point where you're putting your, you know, your savings every month, put it into silver or gold, you know, bury it in the backyard, bury it, you know, off-site, do something with it so that it can't be confiscated easily. But as far as your everyday transactions go, if you work towards getting yourself, you know, involved with Bitcoin and getting away from the fiat money system, then what you're doing is you're taking away the government's ability to counterfeit. And what they will do, sure, they'll still counterfeit, but as they counterfeit, for example, I get out of dollars immediately. I mean, once I get my paycheck, boom, it goes into Bitcoin. You know, I pay for the few things I need to with dollars, but other than that, I'm out of it. So I know that, you know, I'm not sitting on thousands of dollars every month that's just getting destroyed through inflation. I know somebody else is losing their dollars through inflation, and I'm perfectly okay with that because as fewer and fewer people use dollars, the more the government inflates, the more they affect a smaller amount of people, and those people will then feel it even more, you know, feel the inflation even more, and they'll continue to flee out of the dollar. So really, the strength of a currency is directly proportional to how many people are using it and willing to accept it. And so what I start off by just saying, hey, look, if you're new to Bitcoin, learn about it a little bit and just be willing to accept it as payment for something. You know, and if you start
No, we're all over it. On Freedom's Phoenix, we Bitcoined up, man. You go, you subscribe to the e-zine, you give us money, Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. We haven't even really pushed it yet. We're going to be doing it for an end-of-year thing. We're printing up some calendars with our magazine covers and more Bitcoin dime cards and all this kind of stuff. But I'm big advocate of using Bitcoins. I just want to make sure that people understand I'm not putting everything in Bitcoin. If I don't have the ability, that's why it was so important to me, and I'm glad the service from BitInstant and Eric Voorhees helped us out with this, get this thing all taken care of. And then we have other merchant, BitPay and so on. We're working it all out because until I could make the transition from Bitcoins into actual silver, you know, why am I doing this? You know, well, we can. So now, the man's going to have to start passing some laws. What laws would they pass? I don't know. But there's other ways to get off the grid, too. More about that with DailyAnarchist.com. Seth King, when we come back in just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's more than a feeling. I don't know what it is. Is it facts? Is it based on experiences? Is it, you know, that kind of makes a feeling. A feeling of I want to get away. And go to New Hampshire or Arizona. You know, that's one thing. Ian's always ribbing us. You know, he's like, you know, with James Babb, what he's doing in Philadelphia and what we're doing here, you know. And he's like, well, all you communists out there, you need to go to the Free State Project. Got to get New Hampshire. If not New Hampshire, you're a communist. So I'm just going, you know, all right. You know, I'm glad people are, you know, advocating what they're doing where they're at. But you're up in the northern part of New Hampshire, kind of isolated a little bit. But you're... advocacy for civil disobedience takes what form? Are you getting people to move there? And part of their, you know, mission statement is, when you come here, you will do your best or whatever and support our candidates or something. I mean, is that what they're about? You know, how are you playing this game?
Well, the Free State Project doesn't take any sides on what you do once you get here, really. It's mostly its pledges that when you get to New Hampshire, you'll do your best to, you know, advocate that the maximum role of government is, you know, protect life, liberty, and property, okay? But that still leaves the door open for anarchists, right? Because that's just the maximum role of government, which means the minimum role could be zero government, okay? So there are a lot of anarchists in the Free State Project.
Well, it depends on who you ask, I'm telling you that.
Yeah, I know. It depends on who you ask. But no, there are a lot of anarchists here, and we have many different ways of doing whatever it is we do. My personal thing is, my goal in life is to make as much money as humanly possible and make sure that the government gets as little of it as possible. And I don't pay taxes, right? Now, maybe if my employer takes money out of my paycheck, I don't have any control over that, but I'm not going to go file taxes and then write the government a check. I drive without permission. My license has been expired for over 2 years, and I continue to drive. Haven't been pulled over once. Now, that's also because I, you know, obey all the speed limits and the stop signs and stuff like that, much more than I used to. So my goal is, like I said, I didn't want to give the government $31 to renew a license. You know, that's just supporting DMV even more. So everything I do, I'm just really trying to spread the message. In doing so, make as much money as possible and make sure the government doesn't get any of it. You know, and I'm, so far I'm doing a fairly okay job. But the nice thing about the Free State Project is I feel so much better as more and more people are moving here. And there are literally new movers every single day coming to New Hampshire. And I can probably say that I've gotten a total of four other people to move to New Hampshire as for the Free State Project. Two people moved here from Nebraska. They were members on my website, and we had chatted, and they really liked what I was talking about with New Hampshire, so they decided to move, and they're happy now. And then I also recently got my parents to move from California.
Oh, how in the heck did you manage that?
Well, you know, they're just so sick of California. I'm sure your listeners know California is just... it really is a lost cause, and I tried telling a lot of people in the Campaign for Liberty, you know, when I first started thinking about moving to New Hampshire, I was like, hey, people, California is a lost cause. We're never going to, you know, as much as I like John Dennis, we're never going to unseat Nancy Pelosi in San Francisco. It's not going to happen. You know, we're not going to vote out all the bad guys and vote in all the good guys and repeal all the bad legislation in California. I mean, the people there are just way too hopelessly dependent on the state, and they're not going to, you know, California is just doomed. And they know that, my parents know that, and they're sick of all of the things that go along with California. And so, you know, they want to be with their family, which is, you know, me and my wife, and they want to move out here and just live, number one, a lot less threatening life. It's, a lot of people say, oh, well, you're freer in New Hampshire than California because there's a lot less laws. But I see it more like you have a lot less threats in New Hampshire. You're less likely to be aggressed against in New Hampshire than you are in California. So it's a safer location. It's like being in the safest part of the jungle, really, you know. So from here, I think it's a great spot to, you know, build alternate institutions that will replace the state. And it, ultimately, there will be, you know, like the quote in The Matrix, somebody's going to have to fight the state eventually. Well, if we want to prove to ourselves as anarchists that the state can defend itself against, you know, threats, then we have to be able to create an alternate, an alternate defense agency that could ward off the state. You know, and I don't know if that can be done. I believe it can be done, but only time will tell. You know,
well, this Free State Project thing. I remember, you know, it's they got a Free State Project statement of intent, and it basically comes down to this. I will exert the fullest practical effort towards the creation of a society in which the sole role of civil government is the protection of citizens' life, liberty, and property. All right. Well, I exert that I don't want to have anything to do with the government, so I do the Seth King thing.
Right. And I thought maybe they changed the statement of intent. I thought it used to use the word maximum, so I don't know if the maximum.
Well, you know, I'm just looking for the statement, you know, whatever, this first one I could find. But, you know, I remember, you know, they have it on their shirts and T-shirts, and you talk to them, and they go, no, and everybody will tell you what that means. It mm-hmm. means you got to get in line to do the whatever and be in part of and door knock and on the corners and civil and whatever they say is, you know, the definition of this. And I'm like, whoa. Can I define what maximum is? I mean, you know, I'll do it. You know, how about a free state project is free of the state project? How about that?
Right.
You know,
and that's what it is. I mean, libertarians are like trying to herd cats. You know, there's so many different projects, so many people doing different things. And there's a lot of people that moved to New Hampshire or the geographical location commonly referred to as the state of New Hampshire, and they don't even sign the statement. They don't have anything to do with signing up with this free state project. I signed up merely just to, you know, show off the numbers a little bit more. You know, the more people sign up, the more, you know, early movers there are, then there's a little bit, hey, we can show right now we've got over 1,100 people have moved to New Hampshire.
Well, how are the locals seeing your participation in their state?
I think there's mixed reviews. I mean, obviously, if you're a hardcore statist, you're going to be threatened by the libertarian influx. But if you're somebody who's libertarian-leaning, you're going to be really welcoming it. As a matter of fact, if you like to use voting as any indication of strength, relative strength, New Hampshire got 57,000 votes for Ron Paul in the primaries, which was percentage-wise way higher than than any other state. So we've got a lot more Ron Paulites in the state. We've got there has to be no more like concentration of anarcho-capitalists in the world than there are in New Hampshire. I mean, there's just a ton of anarchists in New Hampshire. So that's really nice because there's strength in numbers, and the nice thing is like, for example, we have things like Pork 411, which is if you get in trouble, if you get pulled over or something like that, you can call up a number, somebody's going to hear it, and the message will get relayed. Next thing you know, you've got some free staters showing up where you're pulled over, and they're going to videotape the cops. You know, they'll make sure that you're not going to, you know, get beat up or whatever, and if they do, they'll catch it on videotape and put it on the Internet. There's also underground activity, like, you know, if I want to buy and sell somebody's hamburgers, I can use Bitcoin. I know because there's so many other free staters, somebody's going to be willing to accept, you know, Bitcoins as payment, whereas when I was living in California, I mean, I was the only libertarian activist in a 100-mile radius, so, you know, good luck trying to even talk about Bitcoin there, you know, but here you can do things. You can trade silver and gold, Bitcoin, and, you know, all the things that you would, you know, it's coming together. You're going to see some really amazing things.
Well, are you planning on raising a family there, or children in the future?
No children in the future. My wife and I both decided before we got married not to have children. We're not really into the whole children thing. And as a matter of fact, if I got married before I converted to anarchism, but I'm kind of soured on the whole marriage thing too. Not because I'm unhappy in my marriage, but because why involve the state in a marriage? You know, why does the government need to be involved in this at all? You know, so.
Well, I see in the future this is it's going to be, we're going to breed the statist out. And that's one thing. They go, it's so bad. You can't have children in this terrible world. That, yeah, I go, heck, that's why you have children, you know? So I'm looking forward to generation next. I mean, I was you 20 years ago. And it's so satisfying to me to see, you know, logic and reason just, you know, sprint to the fore and have a great example around the country, but, you know, certainly the Free State Project in New Hampshire, and there's such a diversity of opportunity to express it. And you have someone, you know, you got like Free Talk Live out of there, you know, Ian and Mark doing a great job. They're inspiring to a lot of people, and they, man, he's definitely pushing, you got to go there. But I'm like, ah, that's cool. But then we got on the other side, we got some, you know, Seth King out there, Daily Anarchist, saying, you know, how about just, you know, we don't want a choice of none of the above. How about just none voting? How about, you know, just not participating? How about a cultural shift using the Daily Anarchist? You know, and I, how is the traffic? Are you getting a lot of attention? Are people paying attention?
Oh, yeah. The traffic has been slowly but steadily increasing since I built the site. And I really believe that once Obama gets reelected, all those Ron Paulites from the last several years are going to convert to anarchist capitalism and the site's going to stop.
Yeah, it's I see it coming too, and there's a lot of, you know, I'm open to any. There is no central plan for freedom, no central plan for freedom. You got to do it. It's all going that way. Get on the bus. You know, we'll start getting off of the bus as we get anywhere near maybe Denver or something. Going from the, you know, commie, socialist, fascist, whatever it is on the East Coast, you know, except for New Hampshire, of course. And as we're going on the freedom bus all the way to the West, we get off where we want.